Good afternoon. I'm calling the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today is Monday, April 8th. Let the record reflect the time is 1:35 p.m. Today we have President Vice Chair Senator Reinbold, Senator Michicki, Senator Keel, and myself, Chair Hughes. Please silence or turn off your cell phones. Thanks to those assisting us. Today we have two items on the agenda. We'll continue our work on SB 35, crime, sex crime, sentencing, parole, sponsored by the governor, by considering amendments to the bill and then opening up public testimony. Once that is completed, I'll look for a motion to move the bill from the committee, if that is the will of the committee. Following that, we will take up Senate Joint Resolution 5, Constitutional Amendment, Permanent Fund and Dividend, sponsored by the governor. We'll have an introduction and go through a sectional analysis of the bill. Please, members, keep your questions and comments focused on the items before us, and concise questions and thoughtful brevity are the order of the day, as always. On Friday, the committee introduced a new working document to Senate Bill 35 and reviewed the summary of changes to the bill. Before we begin, I'd like to inform members that the following individuals are available to answer questions about the proposed amendments: Mr. John Skidmore, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law; Ms. Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law; Ms. Regina Largent is on the phone, Judiciary Research Attorney. And before we begin amendments, are there any comments or questions from members? And I should mention we also have Quinlan Steiner on the phone. And then we have some folks that are lining up to testify. So we also, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Public Safety, Michael Duxbury, has also joined us. So are there questions or comments before we begin the amendments? Senator Reinbold?
Madam Chair, can I just ask Department of Public Safety if this is appropriate time to ask them if they're good with the current version of the bill?
You can ask it now if you'd like. Deputy Commissioner Duxbury, can you hear us? Thank you for being available. Please state your name for the record. And
through the chair, Madam Chair, Mike Duxbury, Tom Michael, D-U-X-B-U-R-Y, Alaska Department of Public Safety Deputy Commissioner.
Senator Reinbold?
Commissioner Duxbury, are you familiar with the newest version that were the committee substitute version K, and are you comfortable, or do you see any serious red flags that we need to address today?
I have to be honest, ma'am. I have not a copy of version K in front of me at the moment, so I'm looking to try to accomplish that. Hang on one second. I am in consultation with Kelly Howell, who has gone over that and has, as the department is the commissioner's special assistant, and doesn't appear to be any major changes that are outside of what we had expected. And based on that information that she's provided me, I just don't have the copy in front of me. I am in agreement with it.
Kelly Howell, would you like please come forward, please? Appreciate being put on the spot like this, Kelly, your willingness. That's what happens when you walk in this room. So please state your name for the record, and if you could answer Senator Reinbold's question, please.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Howell. I'm the Special Assistant to the Commissioner for Public Safety and the Legislative Liaison for the Department. And Senator Reinbold, through the chair, the Department doesn't see any major red flags with the current version of the bill, and so hopefully that answers your question. And I apologize, the Deputy Commissioner was also kind of called last minute and didn't have the copy of the bill in front of him.
Senator Reinbold?
And through the chair, this bill is definitely an improvement. And in general, in regards to what's currently on the books, is the department taking a stand in regards to this bill? I know this is the governor's bill. I know there's been changes made to it, but is the governor's office still supporting this bill?
Senator Reinbold, through the chair of the governor's office, I can't speak for the governor's office, but in general, yes, we are supportive of this bill.
Thank you. Thank you. Would you like to ask the same question of Mr. Skidmore? Or?
Absolutely. And you can feel free. You know where I was going, but that's exactly where I was going, yes.
Okay, thank you, Kelly. Mr. Skidmore, Please identify yourself for the record.
Skidmore, I'm the for the record, this is John Skidmore. I'm the director of the Criminal Division for the State of Alaska Department of Law. Through the chair to Senator Reinbold, the changes that have been made, the administration is in support of version K of the bill in the same way it was in favor of the original bill that was introduced.
Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. And I messed up your introduction because you just had a promotion. Congratulations. You are now, deputy commissioner?
To the chair, I won't actually assume that position until May 16th, but the promotion was announced on Friday.
Okay, and your title will be at that time?
Come May 16th, I will be the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division for the Alaska Department of Law.
Okay, thank you. All right, with that, are we ready to take up amendments, or does anyone have any further comment or question before we begin the amendment process?
Madam Chair, maybe.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But before amendments, you mentioned that the public defender was on the line, and I wonder if I could ask a couple of questions about a change that is already in the CS.
Certainly. Before. Certainly, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question about the change in mental state for sexual assault in the second and third degrees from knowing to reckless. And Mr. Steiner, I hope you're able to hear. A couple of questions, maybe broadly, whether that change in mental state causes strong concerns of justice there in terms of the likelihood of convictions, of inappropriate convictions. Also, a resource question. I've got three, Madam Chair, so I'll just put them all out now, if I may. The resource question would be whether the Public Defender Agency sees that change as something that will lead to more higher costs for the state, especially I'm thinking more of the folks your agency represents going to full jury trials or other costs increases. And then maybe just a little bit into the weeds of the details, how do you see this interacting with some of the threshold cases where you have a victim who is, maybe in the early stages of dementia, but especially the interaction with eliminating the marriage defense, or a couple where folks have developmental disabilities? Can you help with the details? So those three questions, Madam Chair. Thank you.
And before you respond, I just want to note for the record, Senator Schauer has joined us. Mr. Steiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Quinlan Steiner. I'm the public defender for the state of Alaska. And in response about whether or not I have concerns, I have a great deal of concern about the changes in these sections as it relates to the mens rea for these certain sex offenses, combined also with the marriage defense changes. Sort of simply put, this changes the standard or the mens rea from knowingly to recklessly, which means somebody can have an honestly held belief that somebody is not either mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware, and still be subject to prosecution. This is particularly problematic in the removal of the marriage defense without replacing it with some sort of consent defense. What you've, in a sense, done with this version of the bill is to create a situation where typical conduct between married couples as well as people who are in relationships and criminalize them. And I would expect that will eventually result in the prosecution and conviction of individuals you wouldn't want otherwise charged or convicted. And it will certainly drive up the litigation and the costs for the rest of the cases that come before this. It makes it really quite difficult to understand how broad the line is between what is criminal and not criminal, particularly involved with individuals who may have dementia or at people who may be consuming alcohol. It's important to recognize that the idea that the prosecution will use their discretion and not charge cases that you wouldn't want charged is really not a basis for not being more specific about what you criminalize. There are many prosecutors on the state, and they have many points of views about what ought to be prosecuted and what not, according to the definition. And you've broadened it to such a degree that you can expect that you will get convictions and prosecutions in cases where consent was there. And that's part of the problem here, is you may actually consent to certain conduct, and that would still be criminal conduct for the defendant, even though there was full consent beforehand.
Mr. Skidmore, I would like to get you to weigh in, please, on that, if you could. And then Senator Reinbold, you brought this forward, so I'll give you an opportunity to speak on it as well. Mr. Skidmore?
For the record, again, this is John Skidmore, the director of the criminal division. There were two issues presented here, Madam Chair, that you've asked me to respond to, I think. The first is about resources, and the second is about the interaction of changing the mens rea for sexual assault as it relates to mentally incapable, incapacitated, or individuals unaware that a sex act is occurring, and that interaction with the elimination of the marriage defense. Let me start with resources. The cases that are currently charged for sexual assault under those categories of mentally incapable, incapacitated, or unaware, I don't believe there would be a substantial difference in resources. It is accurate that there will likely be some additional cases, but it's difficult to quantify that at this time. There are certainly some additional cases that we would be able to charge and that we would pursue with that reduction in the mens rea. However, as to the second point of this resulting in prosecutions that you all would not necessarily want to see, the way I would analyze it is this. The definition of recklessly is found in Alaska Statute 1181-900, subsection A3, and recklessly says that a person has to be aware of and consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur or that the circumstance exists. So in this situation, what you're saying under the scenario described by the public defender is that you have a married couple, and that married couple, one of them may be suffering from some sort of mental issue that results in whether it's dementia or something else, but that results in that person's functioning becoming impaired. And what this would say is that that other partner of that individual that is having those mental issues has to be aware of and consciously disregarding a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the person is suffering from that mental debilitation. And the definition goes on to say that the risk must be of such a nature and degree that the disregard of it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of conduct that a reasonable person would observe in that situation. So while I certainly understand that there are additional cases that we might be prosecuting, the hypothetical posed by the public defender is one that I simply don't share from a legal standpoint when I go back and read that definition and I consider those circumstances. I have to think of situations. Quite frankly, my grandmother suffered from Alzheimer's, and I think of the situation in which if my grandfather was taking care of her and if for whatever reason this one of these scenarios was presented, he would have had to have acted with a disregard, a substantial and unjustifiable risk, and that disregard would have had to have been a gross deviation from the standard of conduct that a reasonable person would observe. I just don't see this resulting in the negative situation that the public defender seems to think that it would. So he and I will just have to have an honest disagreement about how that law will be interpreted.
Thank you, Mr. Skidmore. Senator Reinbold, did you wish to speak to the
Well, I believe, Thank you, Chair Hughes. Basically, from knowingly to recklessly, it is really important. And I believe Casey Schroeder is in the room. Is Casey in the room?
She is. Ms. Schroeder, could you please come forward? Please place your name on the record.
This is Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division at the Department of Law.
Senator Reinbold, did you have a particular question? Or?
Yeah, basically, Casey was in the discussions that I had in regards to this. And if you could just explain the purpose, I know you fully understand why I'm doing this amendment. If you could just proceed to answer Jesse Keel's questions and just the reasons behind this.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, I think that I don't have anything further to add other than what Mr. Skidmore had said. I was aware that you were intending on running an amendment like this. I was not involved in the drafting of it, and I do believe that there was a victim advocacy group that may have brought that forward, but Mr. Skidmore's analysis I concur with Mr. Skidmore's analysis.
All right, thank you. All right, any other members have comments on this particular item? Wrong person. Okay, with that, we will move on to the amendments. So, being that my office worked on them, I will move amendment number one. Are there any objections?
I'll object for purposes of discussion.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Senator Sauer, and I'll ask Mr. Witt to please come to the table, explain amendment number one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Buddy Witt, staff to Chair Hughes. Amendment number one is more of a conforming and clarification of drafting amendment. The amendment references page 15. Pardon me while I get there. And this would be in section 24. And we're simply deleting the line, if the victim is at least 6 years younger than the offender, and referencing this section back to the criminal statute in AS 1141-438C to clear up any ambiguity, just makes the language cleaner for everyone who has to analyze the statute.
Are there any questions regarding that? Senator Schauer, do you maintain your objection?
I'll remove my objection.
And hearing no further objections, Amendment 1 has been adopted. And now I will move amendment number 2.
I'll object for purposes of discussion. Explanation.
Thank you. And Mr. Witt, if you'd like to explain amendment number 2, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Buddy Witt. This amendment references page 23, line 22, starting in line 22. This references the training that would need to be implemented in order for sections 33, 34, 35, and 36, or 35 to be implemented. This was additional training for mandatory reporters, including when we said reporters need to include reporting on any possible sexual offenses against children. This is the training portion of that. It was pointed out to us that the department had means by which to do training via computer-based training, and the in-service, the words in-service carry a connotation that has to be a face-to-face training. So we were removing the words in-service and just specifying that annual training has to be conducted relating to those sections.
Okay, thank you for that explanation. I don't see any raised hands. Senator Schauer, do you want to remove your objection?
Madam Chair, I remove my objection.
And hearing no further objections, amendment number 2 is adopted. I move amendment number 3. Senator Schauer?
Madam Chair, I object for purpose of explanation.
Mr. Witt, amendment number 3.
Madam Chair, Mr. Witt for the record, or Buddy Witt for the record. On page 11, this was an amendment. This is a conforming amendment, again, a language cleanup amendment brought to the chair's attention by Senator Keel's office. And specifically what this does is on line 19 after the word mechanism adds 10 to 25 years, the same language that's in the subsection I. And then this also removes lines 20, 21, and 22. And the reason is because the double I, line 21 and 22, is redundant language. If there is a second offense that is already spoken to in lines 25 and 26 for a second felony conviction, 15 to 30 years. So it's double language that isn't needed. It makes it messy the way it is, and this actually cleans up the language.
Yes, and I want to thank Senator Keel's office for bringing that forward. Any questions or comments regarding that? Senator Schauer.
I remove my objection, Madam Chair.
And hearing no further objections, amendment number 3 is adopted. I move amendment number 4.
I object.
For purposes of discussion.
For purposes of explanation.
Mr. Witt, amendment number 4.
On the last page of the bill, this would be a new effective date that's added in specifically for the training requirements. Section 33 of the bill will put the effective date, if this is added, as September 1st, 2020, in order for the department to be able to put together the training and have it ready prior to the start of that school year.
Okay. Any questions or comments regarding that? Seeing none, Senator Schauer.
I remove my objection, Madam Chair.
And hearing no further objection, amendment number 4 has been adopted. And I will move amendment number 5.
I object for purposes of explanation, Madam Chair.
Mr. Witt, amendment number 5.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Witt, Buddy Witt, for the record, on page 23, line 14, this was an issue with the language that was brought to the chair's committee's attention by Senator Michicki. This will actually clean up the language. On line 14, the words the report to the department or a law enforcement agency as will be deleted, and instead A will be put in there. So the reading of the section will start, will go obligation to make A report as required under A of this section. Again, simplifying the language and making it very clear.
Thank you. And seeing no comments or questions on that, Senator Schauer.
I remove my objection, Madam Chair.
And hearing no further objections, amendment number 5 has been adopted. And are there any further amendments? Seeing none, we have finished with the amendment process. Are there any further discussion or comment before I open public testimony? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to open public testimony. And I see online Beth Freed. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee, Ms. Freed. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony for SB 35.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Beth Freed, and I live in the Greater Palma area. I have appreciated the changes that you and the committee have accomplished on SB 30 or CSS 35. And I look forward to you passing it out of committee with a strong recommendation for passing.
Thank you, Ms. Freed, for your joining us and for your testimony today. I also see we have Keely Olson online. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Keely, please state your name for the record and your affiliation and proceed with your testimony regarding Senate Bill 35. You may need to unmute your phone so we can hear you. Keely, can you hear me? We're having technical difficulty. I'm going to take an at ease to see if we
can you hear me?
Oh, we now can. Yes, go ahead.
Yes. Hi, this is, for the record, Keely Olson, Executive Director of STAR in Anchorage. And I was calling in majority support of the bill, Senate Bill number 35. I had just received it this morning, the working draft, so I haven't had as much opportunity to review it as I would like. But I would say that STAR would definitely be in support of removing the defense of marriage in some sexual assault crimes as it currently exists, specifically under sexual assault in the second degree. As I have testified in the past, I've personally worked with a woman who was raped by her spouse after a gynecological surgery that required her to go in for emergency surgery. As a result, she was assaulted while she was on medications provided to her by her doctor. Her spouse was aware at the time that she was to not engage in any kind of sexual activity. That is just one example of several that have occurred under that fact pattern in Anchorage that I just wanted the committee to be aware of. I also wanted to, commend the SB 35 for increasing and enhancing statutes concerning the use of technology for sexual solicitation of minors and, returning sentencing levels to pre-SB 91 levels, which should enhance victim safety. We definitely want to require sex offenders from other states register. I did have one concern in regards to one of the last amendments that I saw on page 22 that requires that mandated reporting be made to local law enforcement agencies as well as to the department. And I, would seek some clarification on that before I can testify in favor of that. We certainly already have a process for making mandated reports. We definitely take that as a sworn duty to make those reports of harm, and we trust that that information is being relayed from the department to the local law enforcement agency or to the jurisdiction where the crime occurred. Often those are not the same the same thing, and that's just something that I wanted to make the committee aware of. And through the chair, I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Olson. And just in reference to the last item regarding the mandatory reporting, we're just increasing, kind of casting a wider net and an opportunity, particularly for some of the situations that have occurred in the schools with teachers and minors, to alert folks that if there is a suspected sexual crime, when the phone call to the department can also occur, but to law enforcement is important. Most of the time it is happening to the department, but sometimes it's just being reported up the chain, perhaps to the principal. And when it's a sexual crime, we just want to make sure law enforcement is informed. And if they just report it to the department, we know it will also, their process is that it goes to the law enforcement. We want to raise it in the eyes, I believe, of the mandatory reporters. I wanted to mention, too, while you're online, we want to thank you for your involvement and suggestions. And one of the suggestions that you had, which we did not incorporate, but we did work on it for a number of weeks, and it's regarding updating the consent language. And Mr. Skidmore has committed to working on that with us through the rest of this year, because our language is archaic and it does need to be fixed. But it's quite the project because of the domino effect. And Mr. Skidmore's committed to looking into that because other states have worked on that, and we can learn from the mistakes of other states and not go the wrong direction on that. So we expect to bring that back in January, but we thank you for bringing that to our attention. The other thing, Ms. Olson, while I have you online and over in the House, and even last week there was an interview of the governor and articles regarding an amendment brought forward by, let me read the organization, the Community United for Safety and Protection, wanting legislators to amend this particular bill or the House version of it. Hold on a second. Regarding police officers engaging in sexual conduct during the investigation. This sounded quite alarming, but in conversations with law enforcement, one being Captain Dave Hansen, we understand that right now there are laws in place that an officer that would do such would be prosecuted, and that this is not something that law enforcement, whether at the state trooper level or local law enforcement, condones or does. Would you like to speak to that particular matter, Ms. Olson?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I would state that STAR is not aligned in any way and is not at all engaged with that citizens group that we see seems to have a hidden agenda or maybe not so hidden agenda towards decriminalizing sex work and disregarding any kind of harm that may be caused by human trafficking. STAR has been actively involved in a couple of different cases with law enforcement who engage in sexual misconduct, and one of those being Officer Anthony Rollins, former Officer Anthony Rollins. And I can assure you that the response from our local law enforcement was stellar in regards to protecting and working with the victims to hold that former officer accountable. And I would say that I've only heard anecdotally that people who are engaged in working in that life, that they have been told by this citizens group not to come to STAR, not to seek assistance if they are harmed, and that is something that we are always available to anyone in our community for anyone that is harmed to make sure that they are aware of their resources, aware of their rights as a victim of a crime, that no one should be subjected to sexual violence. But certainly we are unaware of any cases that have come forward that would be what that citizens group was alleging, that it was kind of standard fare. That's not been our experience, and we do hear a number of cases here in Anchorage, some of which are reported to law enforcement by adults that choose to interact with law enforcement and some that are not, but I'm not aware of any that would meet that fact pattern.
And if there were such a pattern, we have laws on the book that the officer would be charged. And I would like to bring, thank you very much for Ms. Olson. Does anybody have any other question? Because I want to bring Deputy Commissioner Duxbury online for that particular topic. But if anything has anything for Ms. Olson, I'm not seeing anything. Thank you very, very much for your work and your support what you do day in and day out to help victims across our state. We appreciate your work. So, Deputy Commissioner Duxbury, if you would like to speak in regard to the issue as far as what this one community group has put forward, do you see a need for such an amendment?
Madam Chair, Deputy Commissioner Mike Duxbury. I have been associated with the troopers for approximately 30 years, and as I have testified in the past, a great deal of time has been spent, one, working undercover, but also being the supervisor of many undercover operations. I don't think I could state it any more succinctly than the representative of STAR, and I was also aware of and participated in some of the prosecution of the police officer, Mr. Rollins, in terms of the investigative part of it. There is already on the books a law, and nothing that in the narrative that I have seen so far from these women, and not to belittle the thought process in any way, shape, or form, but but to explain it from this point of view, we do not engage in these operations one-on-one ever. There is never a time when we engage in a operation with somebody who may be involved in the sex work life as them being our interest as sole targets. It is always the underlying criminality and the people that are involved in it. One of the things that happens from the very beginning, and every one of them is monitored, not only monitored by surveillance, not only monitored by people in perhaps an, another location, but also from the beginning we get on board with a district attorney. We get on board sometimes if it involves federal cases with a attorney from the U.S. attorneys. We have a high-level supervisor. We have the next level supervisor and the line supervisor involved because there are a number of things that are involved here that involve danger and danger with the people that are involved in the criminal milieu behind the scenes and danger involved in the lifestyle produces problematic issues for people in contact. And the narrative that I have seen so far seems to be based on some supposition that this is a one-on-one situation. It would have to be a sense of corruption from all the way from the attorney's office all the way through the line troopers and officers that we work with for this to actually take place in the narrative that I have heard so far. We have the laws on the book already that would, if there is an aberrant or rogue individual that is using his shield to harm or take advantage of young ladies or other people in this manner, there are laws on the books that already make him prosecutable. And in our profession, it is abhorrent to us that we cannot expect that integrity and ability to trust one another in those situations. So we like to make sure that we hold up to the public that integrity, and we go after those folks that do wrong, and we prosecute them.
Thank you, Deputy Commissioner. I thought it was important to get that on the record. I believe in the other body, our counterpart committee, there was some discussion that there was need for this, and I just wanted to get on the record. So the public knows we have laws to address this if it were to occur, and the importance of integrity among law enforcement. Thank you for pointing that out. Are there any other comments? I want to check to see if we have anybody in the room. I'm not seeing anybody else online for public testimony, but before I leave this topic, does anyone have anything on that? So thank you, Mr. or Deputy Commissioner. We appreciate your chiming in on that. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on SB 35? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Roger Branson. I am an advocate for Consumers and Mental Health Services out of Eagle River, Alaska. On the topic, there's just the recent conversation that just happened. I'd like to ask Officer Duxbury if, just prior to his coming on, if there was a person who worked out of Palmer that was engaged in subversive activity that they got made aware of, and or the possible trauma that being a subject to such an investigation might inflict on a person and how they would overcome that. And that would just be my comment, and I appreciate that.
Mr. Branson, this is for testimony on SB 35, so you're welcome to submit that question to my office, and I can pass that to the Deputy Commissioner. Do you have any testimony on SB 35?
I am very concerned that we proceed in a way that protects everybody. And I would be very concerned that if we rely on STAR, that when a case comes to them, that they decide to turn away because they don't think it was illegal, that when that gets to the, ends up being prosecuted, that they also come forward with whatever evidence they had that might exonerate. I'm just cautious this committee is absolutely doing some awesome work that needs to be done, just that it's really protects the people that need to be protected, and I do have some concerns about that. And so I thank you for the time and the ability to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Branson, for your testimony today. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to testify in SB 35? Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony. And at this time, are there any further comments on the bill itself? Any closing remarks? And then we'll see what the will of the committee is. Senator Reinbold.
Chair Hughes, I just want to say thank you. We've been working on this bill for, gosh, I think it's 2 months now, something like that, and with some of the highest sexual assault in the nation in Alaska, I think this was really, really an important topic. I'm absolutely for strengthening criminal law, and this bill becomes more victim-centered, and I think that's very, very important, and with that, I strongly support strengthening our criminal law in this area. Thank you.
Are there any other comments from committee members? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank you and your staff, both Ms. Largent and Mr. Witt, for a tremendous amount of work on this bill. I think on the whole, it's a really good piece of legislation. I very much appreciate the additional tools and resources for victims that are here, and some of the other work that the governor brought forward, particularly the eliminating the marriage defense, I think is important. And I want to talk just a minute about a couple of pieces, though, that give me a little bit of pause. I think that in some of these cases, while we are doing good work, updating some of the electronic stuff, updating some of the crimes against children stuff, and modernizing it, making good changes, we're also cranking up the severity of some offenses in ways that there's no question in my mind is going to cost us in public safety resources, but is unlikely to make a difference. The changes that are going to catch people who weren't getting caught before are excellent, but as we talked about in some past meetings, changes that send people to jail for terrible crimes on par with much more serious actions, right? Terrible crimes against a child on par with killing that child. I think distort our criminal code, and they're going to cost money for things that aren't going to improve public safety. So I think that some of the changes we're talking about, you know, the intent language here about more proactive investigations for internet crimes against children is great. I mean, it's going to be important, and it's going to catch wrongdoers, and that will help make fewer victims. That's where we need to focus our resources. That's the most important changes that this bill makes. Some of the other stuff, I think, is going to land us in court. You know, we talked earlier about the changes in the sex offender registry, and I'm in favor of catching everyone who ought to be on a registry because they did something that would be a registrable sex offense in Alaska. The language in the bill catches people who did things that's not a registrable sex offense in Alaska. In some cases, it's not even a crime in Alaska. And our Supreme Court has looked at our Constitution in Alaska and said there's a punitive element to being on the registry. There isn't a constitutional way for us to make people who did something that's not a crime in Alaska undergo a punishment. So I hope that as the bill moves forward, we can tweak and adjust that so that we've got the strong public safety protections and we're not wasting time going back to the Supreme Court. I guess the last thing that I'll say, and then I'm anxious to move the bill through the process because it's got a lot of really good changes in it, is that as much as I really think it's a great change to eliminate the marriage defense, combining that with the change in mental state for sexual assault in the second and third degrees really worries me. Because as I listen to Mr. Skidmore read the definition of what it means to be reckless, I don't know where that line would be for a couple who's been married a long time and one of them has dementia or early onset Alzheimer's that gradually gets worse. I don't know where I could tell that spouse where the line is. You know, the knowing standard is pretty clear. then the doc is going to say, you know, you're going to know that your partner of many years is no longer really there, no longer able to consent. A reckless standard? I don't know. Remember, this includes sexual contact. So just getting in the bed naked can be an issue. We need to catch the bad actors, and I'm worried that the two changes together create some real problems as we do the right thing. So I think the bill could use a little more work, but I'm anxious to move it along its path.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Senator Michiki.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank you for all your work on this bill. I don't know how long a state has to continue being number one with a giant trophy in the lobby of the Capitol celebrating the fact that our young people are the most sexually abused in the United States. And it's not getting better. It's getting worse. The numbers are increasing. So cranking up the severity, you bet. There's only one way to break the cycle. And in many communities in our state, perpetrators have been known to be perpetrators for decades. Mm-hmm. And I will drop the name Peter Miller again, who allegedly raped babies for 30 years before he killed 10-year-old Ashley Barr. And we'll talk about the registry issue. Just because our young state has not been developed far enough to catch that some of these crimes should have been crimes years ago, we should borrow from the experience of those other states. When they've determined that the things in the Justin Schneider case should have been crimes many years ago, we're recognizing that some of those states are far advanced of us. States with far lower incidences of sexual abuse and sexual assault. So I really appreciate the way that we've moved on this. There is more than one way to kill a child. I think it is as serious. You destroy a child physiologically. You destroy a child emotionally. They act out later. The cycle continues, and you pay not only with the quality of life of that child and that family and that community in this state, but you pay in almost every category of spend in our state budget, because that life, if it ever normalizes, it will be after years and years and years of counseling and very hard work. But if you tie all those other issues that we've got, that we're battling right now, the opioid abuse, the alcoholism, the suicide, the domestic violence, sexual assault, this bill tries to do something about it, and I really appreciate the committee's work on it, and I support it wholeheartedly moving forward.
Thank you, Senator Michiki. I just want to say, before I ask for the will of the committee, one of the things referred to as far as are we improving public safety by increasing the severity? And one of the things we have to remember, we've seen statistics having to do with people with sexual crimes and how they can actually respond to some treatment. But we have to understand that one of the reasons their recidivism rates are what they are is because of the containment model that other criminals are once they're out on parole, are not in the same kind of very, very strict structure. And the number of years that they are contained actually in the prison system really keeps that reoccurrence low. I also think that I had the Suicide Prevention Council folks in my office, and it seems like we've gone round and round that mountain for decades in this state, and it's grievous. And getting to the root of the problem, part of getting to the root of the problem is calling things for what they are. And we have many children, teens, and adults in the state who've been terribly harmed. And I would even go along with what Senator Michiki just said, but even a step further, I think that having lived through that, it could be for some people even worse than a death. So the fact that a sentence is in the same range as a murder of a child, I actually do not have any problem with that. As far as the concerns regarding the marriage defense and the knowingly change, I do think that prosecutors are going to go after the bad guys. I don't think we're going to have a problem. I could see where Senator Keel might be concerned, and perhaps if you know that could be addressed at some point, but I really don't think it's going to surface as a problem. And then the final thing is, as we close out, knowing how it's been in this committee, working on some of these, especially when involved children, and how we were able to increase penalties when children are victims, and just thinking about some of the horrific circumstances, it's made me realize those in the Department of Law that are dealing with these crimes on a daily basis, the prosecutors who are working in this field, I just want to give a shout out to them because day in, day out, they're dealing with actual people, that victims that have encountered the kind of things that we've talked about. And so I just want to thank them. I know that's not an easy thing to get up in the morning and to go to work and deal with that kind of thing, but I just want to commend them. I hope that these tools will be helpful to them. And as I said on the Senate floor the other day, we can't eradicate evil with good policy, but we certainly hope we can deter it and turn the corner. And it's a subject that I hope we continue to work on. And as I mentioned earlier, we probably will be bringing back some legislation with the help of the department regarding the consent language, and perhaps other things will surface at that time as well. And so with that, I would like to ask now, what is the will of the committee? Vice Chair Reinbold.
Madam Chair, I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 35, Work Order 35-GS1873/K, as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Hearing no objection, the bill passes from committee to the next committee of referral. Let the record reflect that legislative legal is authorized to make any technical and conforming changes in order to implement the adopted amendments. And we'll take a brief at ease while we sign the documentation. Pick up Senate Joint Resolution 5, Constitutional Amendment, Permanent Fund and Dividend, sponsored by the governor. Quite a switch after a very heavy topic on our prior bill. So today we have with us Department of Revenue Commissioner Bruce Tangeman and Mr. Bill Milks from the Department of Law. And I invite you to place your name on the record, introduce the bill, and walk the committee through a sectional analysis. And I want to mention that we also have Ms. Ann West, Director of the Permanent Fund Dividend Division, and Ms. Pauline Swanson, Administrative Specialist for the Permanent Fund Dividend Office, available for questions as well. And they are going to be online, or are they in the room? Oh, one is in the room, and Pauline is maybe calling in, but I'm not seeing her quite yet. So with that, gentlemen, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Bruce Tangeman, Department of Revenue.
Thank you, members of the committee, and Madam Chair, Bill Milks, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Law.
Thank you for the opportunity to be in front of the committee to present SJR 5, a change to the Constitution to include the permanent fund dividend. I've got a few talking points that I'll go through to introduce the bill, and then I'll turn it over to Bill to do the sectional analysis. For over three decades, the permanent fund dividend calculation and the amount paid to Alaskans was never questioned, regardless of the size of the check. As recently as 2012, 2013, they were about $900 calculated. A lot of people forget about that, I think, but just five, six, 7 years ago, they were under $1,000 per the calculation. The permanent fund and the permanent fund dividend was not broken and did not need to be fixed. The dividend was not an issue until the last administration, when the legislature appropriated the full amount, the governor vetoed half of it, and then the following 2 years, the legislature and the governor came to resolution on a dividend that was less than the calculated amount. So this constitutional amendment would do a few different things that Bill will speak to in more detail, but first of all, it would guarantee the permanent fund dividend. PFDs would not be subject to appropriation. They would be automatically transferred for payment to Alaskans. It would protect the permanent fund dividend. PFDs would not be reduced by the legislature or governor's veto. They would just follow the calculation amount. And any changes to the statutory PFD formula require a vote of the people. So if Alaskans chose to participate and vote on a change to the dividend, it would be up to them. And this is part of the permanent fiscal plan that Governor Dunleavy has introduced, including a constitutional spending limit, and then a constitutional amendment for any changes to taxes or addition of taxes to Alaskans. So I will turn it over to Bill to walk through the details of the legislation. It's not a very large bill.
Thank you. Mr. Milks?
Yes. Thank you, Chairwoman. The Commissioner just hit the highlights, and he's correct. It's not a long bill. It's an important bill, but it's not lengthy. You know, if we take SJR 5, you can see we have Section 1. Section 1 is simply a conforming amendment that provides that except as provided under Section B, all income from the permanent fund shall be deposited in the general fund unless otherwise provided by law. That conforming amendment is inserted in order to provide for the focus of this amendment, which is to permit, as set out in Section 2, that a portion of the income from the permanent fund shall be transferred solely for a program of dividend payments. The section further provides in subsection B that the program will be as provided by law, and it will begin with as that law read on January 1, 2019. The dividend program can be changed by the legislature subject to the approval of the voters. Subsection C then sets forth a process by which a law could be enacted that would change the dividend program subject to approval of the voters. Section 3 is a transition provision that again provides that the permanent fund dividend amendment would begin with the law in effect as of January 1, 2019. And then Section 4 provides that the resolution shall be placed before the voters at the next statewide general election as provided under the Alaska Constitution. So as the commissioner explained, this amendment will do a couple important things. One, it will now provide that a portion of permanent fund income will be used for a dividend program. It also provides for an automatic transfer of the money of the dividend of the income for that dividend program, so without an appropriation. And then it's setting in the Constitution a dividend program that can be changed by the legislature and the voters working together. This constitutional amendment, of course, follows up on the Alaska Supreme Court's decision in the Wilikowski versus State case, providing that the dividend program set forth in statute is subject to legislative appropriation and governor's veto. So with that, that's the sum and substance of this dividend amendment, proposed amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Milks and Mr. Tangeman. Mr. Tangeman, how many years has the dividend gone through the budget appropriation process? My understanding was initially it was a direct transfer to the program and payment. Was that recently that it became a part of the appropriation process?
Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if Mr. Milks does or not, but if he doesn't, we can get back to you on that.
Madam Chair, certainly since the 1980s, it's been through the budget process, through the appropriation process, and then the court, of course, ultimately concluded that it is subject to appropriation.
Okay, thank you. One of the arguments I've heard from folks who don't support putting the PFD in the amendment is that it doesn't reach the level of a fundamental right. And I think about education and health care as things that are very important for society. And we have a K-12 system, and we, at the federal level, there's Medicaid, Medicare. In the U.S. Constitution, though, I don't believe that public education or health care are listed as one of the fundamental rights. And so my question is, when it comes to fundamental rights, can you think of other things that wouldn't rise to that level that are in our Constitution or in other state constitutions that might make the case that just because it's not a fundamental right doesn't mean we can't or shouldn't put it in our Constitution?
I'll allow Mr. Milks to address that one. It looks like he's going to his notes.
Yes. Madam Chair, Alaska has in Article 8 a natural resources constitutional provision, which is, I think, not common for state constitutions and not in the U.S. Constitution. That provides for a statement of policy as far as the utilization of the state's natural resources for the individuals, for the collective benefit of the state residents. Because I would cite that as one example.
Mm-hmm. And would there be examples in other states where they might have something unique that they've included? And you may have to think about that and get back to us, but I'd be interested.
Yes, Madam Chair, that is probably one I'd have to think about.
So. One of the other questions I have is mathematically, now that the POMV, the 5.25, and then it's going to drop to a 5%, POMV, and even though I know there was a alleged legal opinion that similar to the court case that the legislature could decide to draw out additional outside of that POMV draw, but just mathematically, as the fund were to grow, would it ever consume all of the POMV and it would require more than the POMV? Mr. Tangeman?
Madam Chair, yes, it could. The calculation on the POMB, like you said, is a 5.25% draw, stepping down to 5%. It's silent on how those funds are spent. Obviously, we're addressing government and dividends. But if the rate of growth on the budget itself were not even significant. We're looking at historical over the last 10 or 15 years, the rate of growth has been around 4%. Under that scenario, the entire POMV is consumed by government probably within the next 10 years or so. So the fact that the rate of growth for spend is not connected to the POMV calculation whatsoever, it could be consumed completely by government spend, yes.
My question was actually, could it ever be consumed by the PFD if you continued to follow the historic formula?
Madam Chair, I believe that is also possible because if you enjoy continued returns, as we've seen, the dividend would obviously continue to grow. We saw returns 15% to 20% over at least two of the last 5 years. So without market corrections factored in, the dividend would certainly continue to grow. We're estimating at about 3,000 right now. So yes, it could also be consumed by the full POMB.
And
or the POMB could be consumed by the full dividend, excuse me.
And with a healthy growth, and particularly if the spending cap constitutional amendment were to pass as it's written, with any excess being folded back in into the permanent fund, potentially we could be looking at very large PFDs in the future, and that makes me think about people from outside of Alaska wanting, let's go up to Alaska. So question, I noticed that this includes any changes even in eligibility having to go before the voters, and this might be a question for Mr. Milks, whether the administration would be open to a change that would require, and would it be constitutional to change the eligibility to, let's say, a two-year, must be a resident for 2 years, or live in Alaska for 2 years prior to being eligible, and also perhaps changing the eligibility so that a person can only be absent, I believe it's 180 days now, changing that to say 90 days or 100 days. And then lastly, if the administration would be open to restricting the number of years a person could be out of state, if they are out of state for qualifying reasons, but it extends beyond, let's say, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, whether it's for medical or military or such, where they're kind of settling out of state for a season, and they may eventually come back, but they may not. So would the administration be open to eligibility changes such as that and removing the eligibility actually language from the amendment so those changes could be made in statute? I don't think the people of Alaska would, I think they'd get more up in arms about the change of the check size than they would about the change in the eligibility, at least for newcomers to the state.
Madam Chair, I'll answer the first part and let Bill speak to the details, but I think the governor would entertain any conversation that the legislature wants to bring forth on this matter. I think it's a very important issue. The dividend has been, it's been on cruise control for several decades. It's the calculation has been telling you how much the dividend is, and that's how much you receive, regardless of how low that calculation might be. So I think over the last couple of years, we've seen more of an engagement by the folks because the statute is no longer being followed. So if adjustments to the statutes want to be introduced or discussed, I think the administration would certainly be open to discussing those.
If you could get back to us on those the eligibility things that I brought up as far as his thoughts on those, as far as a two-year period for newcomers, shortening the time a person could be out of state, and then some kind of a cutoff for people who leave the state for qualifying reasons, but that they end up being gone for a number of years. I would be curious as to that, because that might be helpful in containing some of the concerns. So Senator Keel has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner Tangeman, or maybe Mr. Milks, whoever would prefer, I guess the chair's questions about the SB 26 limit and the dividend payment leads me to the language of the proposed amendment. Is the SB 26 limit in that rapid growth, long-term explosive growth scenario, is the SB 26 limit effective? Is it part of the system provided by law as this would read?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the SB 26 debate, as it took place over the last several years, focused on what was an amount that could be taken from the earnings reserve and not harm the earnings reserve. If you speak to the permanent fund, if you speak to the executive director, they don't weigh in on how it's going to be spent. The entire debate was about what's a sustainable draw from the earnings reserve itself. Step two would have been the split between how do we split that, and I think with not being able to come to consensus over the last couple of years, the step one of using it in a responsible manner was the critical part. How it's being spent is where we're at right now. This administration certainly believes the constitutional change to the existing spending limit is a critical part as well, which would put a cap on spending. So that would address government certainly absorbing the bulk of SB 26 and the POMB draw. So with that limit being set in place as far as SB 26, the allowable part, the focus of how it is to be spent is critical because, again, you can only draw X amount out under SB 26 and the POMB.
Senator Keel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to clarify the question, we have a five-year period of 11-12% growth. And so half the earnings over the average period is more than the 5% cap. This says the program dividend payments as provided by law. So is SB 26 a provision by law protected by this constitutional amendment? Do we reduce the dividend?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. Under this constitutional amendment, the dividend is provided by law. What we have done is propose the dividend provided by law as the statutory dividend framework, which is what the Alaska Supreme Court in the Wilikowski case identified. So they identified that there is a statutory calculation that addresses income available for distribution. Then there's another statutory calculation that says 50% of that income pursuant to that calculation shall be transferred to the from the earnings reserve account for the distribution of dividends. And then the third piece of that program under the Wilikowski case identified was the eligibility requirements. So this constitutional amendment would set out in law the existing statutory framework, that three-piece part. I think the commissioners described the SB 26 statute, which set up a statutory POMB framework as far as a sustainable draw. So they're related, but the constitutional amendment would establish the existing statutory program on dividends. That's the proposal.
Senator Keel? So,
Madam Chair, I have failed in question asking 102. I will ask it in writing and follow up. Can I move to another subtopic?
Well, actually, and I know Senator Reinbold, but just to tag on to that, because when I read at the very top of page 2, provided by law, as it reads on January 1st, 2019, the POMV is in law also, but you're referring to the historical formula in law, and I don't think it, there's ambiguity there. I believe that's where he's going. And so there's the historical formula is on the law as of January 1st of this year, as well as the POMV is in the law right now. So,
yes, I am.
Madam Chair, Mayor, in the middle of this, I think there's been a lot of confusion on this as we've gone through finance, too, and talking about this back and forth and where we are. And I think a lot of people don't understand. I could be wrong, but I don't think it's really that complicated. Bottom line is the SB 26 was passed last year. We have that draw formula. That's where the money's coming from. That's the amount. The statutory formula that's been in place, Bruce, as you talked about, for 40 years is still in place. So if this was to pass as it is written, you would be drawing an amount off that POMV model, like you said, that would be calculated and distributed versus the statutory formula that we've had. That's where there gets to be confusion about the amount and whether you didn't pass anything else with SB 26. So there was no change to the 50-50, so you have this weird statute that's allowing more or less for those checks to go up and down. So that's really a summary of what's taking place here. But I have seen a ton of confusion about SB 26 and 50-50 from people in this conversation. So it seems like there's still some of that floating around. And I may or may not be answering Jesse's question or Senator Keel's question, but that to me that's the biggest part of the public discussion is that we still have the statutory formula. That hasn't changed. The only thing that has changed is SB 26 and went to that POMV draw model, that endowment model. That's it. And this is proposing, as written, to put both of those into the Constitution, and we would have them that way. I mean, not SB 26, but the formula itself is my point.
Senator Schauer, the difficulty is that earlier Commissioner Tangeman mentioned that mathematically the historical formula could actually exceed the POMV draw. So that's where there's the conflict. So I don't know if you have anything else to respond before we go to Senator Reinbold. And we'll come back to you, Jesse. I know you had another one, but Senator Reinbold.
Thank you. So just refresh our memory. What is the difference of how the state, and I see two lifelines behind you, so you may need to refer to them. What's the difference between how the state invests the earnings reserve account versus the principal account?
Madam Chair, they are both invested equally. They both are treated as investment opportunities by the permanent fund. So they don't differentiate other than the liquidity aspect of what they're expecting to transfer and how liquid they need to remain. They don't treat for investment purposes the ERA and the corpus very differently.
To the chair.
Senator Reinbold.
So where I'm going with this, it just seems to me like if there's a $3 billion draw, let's say there's $15 billion in the earnings reserve, and there's a $3 billion draw, and then there's another $2 billion, draw that we're considering doing for the paybacks. You would invest, then that's $10 billion less, so you can't do long-term investments. So I'm just trying to figure out the rate of return on the earnings reserve versus the principal, because to me it seems to be very different strategies. We have short-term and we have long-term. So, and I need to know the return, because I'm going somewhere with this, but I need to know those, answer those questions first.
Through the chair, Senator Reinbold, that's a misperception or a calculation that some people look at, and they calculate what's coming out, but they never calculate what's going in. For instance, they're calculating based on, a 6.55% expected return. So for fiscal year 20, they're estimating $4 billion to go into the fund, and then the $3 billion to come out through the POMB. So the investment portfolio of the $65 billion is what you should concentrate on. The earnings reserve is just a repository for realized gains. So they don't necessarily look at a dollar in the earnings reserve versus a dollar in the corpus and invest it differently. It's more about the return on the full $65 billion. Any realized gains are deposited into the earnings reserve, and that's your $17 billion or $18 billion that's there now. So if you took $3 billion out through a POMB, and, for instance, the back pay, because that's the other number that's on the table, if another $600 million were taken out for this year's back pay, but $4 billion was going to be earned, you'd net $400 million increase. So I don't know if I answered your question or not, but.
Senator Reinbold?
Basically, yeah, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense, I guess, in regards to, because you're just saying take the interest, then they just dump it in. I think it does matter. I think it does matter if there's a POMB draw. I think it does matter if then there's a permanent fund dividend, full $3,000. And it does matter if there's another $2 billion drawn from unallocated, I believe is what we're calling it, but it's for back pay of the dividends, because then it is going to affect the dividends, you know, in the future. And so I just think just understanding the whole scope of the different trigger points with the POMV and paying back the PFD and the full PFD, they really do all play together. Because the problem I have, even though I support the concept of the PFD, you know, in the statutory formula, where my concern comes in is if then all the people, and the reason why I support it is because of that they don't get their rights to the land, you know, below the subsurface rights. So it's a dividend because the state owns the subsurface. And so I think it eventually in the big picture, if we take those rights away from people and dividend away, is that going to impact the regional corporations that have the mineral rights below? And I know that's opening a whole other can of worms. I get it. But if we're all equal and fair, you know, under the law, which is one of the very first things in the Constitution, if it affects the people and they get stripped of their dividend and also stripped of their rights to the mineral rights, I mean, I think there's a constitutional issue there. I genuinely do. But if we step back and we look at it just all the draws, are we giving people false hope that there is going to be? Because if we go back to the 2008, the massive dip that ended up reducing the dividend, I mean, I just I'm concerned about, you know, the people's hope of believing it's a constitutional right. You know, they have a dividend, but it might be a negative dividend. You know, if the corporation, God forbid, loses a whole bunch of money. So, you know, that's where I personally struggle with this. But I just think in the big picture, we do need to understand how the POMV, the statutory formula, and the unallocated draw does impact future dividends. It's very important to not just brush that aside. I know that was more of a comment. I asked my two questions at the beginning, but I kind of wanted to just get that out there.
Okay, thank you, Senator Reinfeld. Senator Keel, back to you.
Thank you. Any particular reason that the administration chose the 120 days after enactment standard? That leaves available both primary election ballots and general election ballots, with the desire to constitutionally protect, does it make more sense? What was the thinking?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, the 120 days we just borrowed from the initiative constitutional language in Article 2, Section 4. So. Just to maintain some consistency with time periods in the Constitution.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess that it raises for me questions of the strategic actions a legislature might take in terms of which ballot they want the proposed change to take effect on. Mm-hmm. I guess the other question I had on the technical language of the bill, would the money automatically transferred here count under Article 9, Section 17B? It's the available for appropriation language. What would be the impact?
Through the chair, Senator Keel. The amendment, of course, proposes an exception that this money would move without an appropriation. If that doesn't fully answer your question, then that might be something that I would have to go back and look at as far as Section 17B, which is the CBR draw mm-hmm. issue. Mm-hmm. I can go back and look at that.
Thank
you. Oh, go ahead.
But thank you. The last one I had, we talked a little bit about the interaction with the Senate Bill 26 POMB structure that's in statute. Is there a reason that the proposal does not include any inflation-proofing protection, or for that matter, the POMB-type cap in the Constitution? The interaction of the two, I think we heard in the earlier conversation, is is valuable, if occasionally fraught. What would be the receptiveness to further protecting the fund with either inflation-proofing language or with a POMB limit?
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I believe as part of the bigger package with the other constitutional limits, I think the inflation-proofing portion is handled under the spending cap / savings constitutional amendment. Again, it's a package, so you'd have to look at all of them combined. But this one doesn't address the inflation proofing. That's handled through the spending limit savings account constitutional limit.
Madam Chair, I wonder if there are some charts or runs that would show how that's projected to work.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, we can certainly, I can work with my staff and see what we've done on that. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think it would be valuable, you know, in the long term, as we attempt to use a statutory percent of market value cap, but maintain our constitutional distinction between principal and earnings reserve, as gains are realized and investments turn over the very long term, the value of the principal diminishes and the value of the earnings reserve sort of takes over.
And so without some sort of limitation that has teeth, the possibility of unstructured draws, I think was the term, becomes more and more fraught. There's more and more risk to the ultimate value of the fund from those. So if we're going to look at a constitutional amendment on the permanent fund, I think it's worth looking at an actual protection that will be effective for generations rather than a few years.
Thank you. Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we're getting past time, so I'll try to make it quick. I do have a comment and a question at the end. Bruce, I understand what you're saying about that. I mean, one of the counterpoints, I think, on the three-year payback, and I know the people have concerns, I get that, is that had that $2 billion been taken out over the 3 years because the law was followed and not ignored by a previous governor and the previous legislatures, then that money would still be – that money would not be there. That fund value would be less today over time because that money was taken out according to the statute. So we can argue about whether we're taking out that three-year payback or not, but the point is that the fund value would have changed over time regardless, and the numbers would be off a little bit based on – how the stock market was performing over those 3 years. But the point of what you were saying, which was Senator Reinbold was asking, is that, you know, I've tried to make the numbers easy. You have $20,000 in your bank account, you add $4,000 in interest, you take away $4,000, you're still at 20. And that's kind of what we're talking about here. And over the scheme of the payback in that 3 years, what I think is important the public hears is that that money was never used, in essence. So that, but it, had it been used, it would have, the fund difference would have been different, the earnings reserve, because that would have been gone every year over the 3 years, mm-hmm. had the statutes been followed. They weren't. So you can argue whether the money's there or not, but the point is that's what happened. So if you were taking it out at $600 or $700 million over the next 3 years, in aggregate, it's like adding $4,000 and taking $4,000 away from your account. You're still about where you were. It's just that simple. And that's what I try to get across to people as we talk about it. Whether it's wise to do it in the environment is a different debate today with where we sit, but that's how the numbers would work out. It's just like your checking account. Mm-hmm. My question going back to this, because I know that was a long debate about it, that was a comment, is eligibility. We discussed this in the previous committee too. Eligibility is a concern of mine being enshrined into the Constitution. And I agree with Senator Hughes talking about this and thinking about how we might want to change this, because I am concerned it puts us at a nexus for litigation of making an individual right, the right to your whatever your eligibility requirements are. So one of my greatest concerns as we're changing the Constitution, because I do believe that we need to have a spending cap that makes sense that's tied to this, as well as looking how the program should be protected for the future, is individual eligibility requirements, should that be enshrined in the Constitution, and what is that setting us up for that is a consequence we may not want to put into the Constitution? So I want to further debate on this, and I have asked that question before, but since this is a new committee on this one, I would like Mr. Milks perhaps to respond to that about what the potential downfalls are of enshrining an individual right like that in the Constitution would be, because we didn't get too far into that before. Long question, Madam Chair, I apologize, but I think those are very important points that came out of the last debate.
Would you like to respond, Mr. Milks?
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Schauer, the proposed amendment does include the requirement as far as voter approval of changes in the dividend program, approval both of the amount calculation as well as eligibility. So I think eligibility, thought of it along the lines I think the chair alluded to earlier about a certain period of time you have to be an Alaska resident. That's an eligibility rule. We have the eligibility statutes that address that kind of basic question, as well as some of the exceptions for permitting individuals to be outside of Alaska. Those are in the eligibility statutes. So I think they would be covered under this proposed amendment if that was the, if it was adopted in this form. That's a little different from other sort of ancillary issues that I think Senator Reinbold raised in the prior committee that would be maybe something about like garnishment, things like that. We do not think that changes in those rules would be subject to voter approval, but because that's sort of a consequence of receiving a dividend, that maybe someone could garnish it. That's not really an eligibility issue in our mind. It would not be covered, but the basic eligibility is, as the committee's mentioned, period of time to be in the state in order to be eligible for a dividend. That is under the current proposed amendment.
Mr. Senator Schauer.
I'll go to Mr. Kidd. Okay. Just very briefly, my point is, as we discuss this and debate it, one of the things I'm looking at is whether or not that should be an individual right and those requirements, and are those tools that the legislature needs to keep in its toolkit for down the road changes, as opposed to putting that in the Constitution and we get, for lack of a better term, stuck with them? I have concerns about that. I am on board with trying to protect this program. The struggle is about, I think, the amount, the ability, you know, to the legislature to change that down the future, because what happens if we're stuck with 50-50? I like the handcuff on government spending. It is, you only get so much money. But down the road, does that drive us to taxes? There's more things to discuss here, and I don't want to drill down at this point being behind, but I do think that eligibility, certainly at this top level, having discussed it, is a tool that we perhaps do not want to take out of the legislature's hands, because that isn't about protecting the program. That isn't even really about the check amount. That's about making sure that as things change, if we wish to change eligibility requirements, kids going off to college, military, whatever, perhaps we probably don't want that necessarily in the Constitution, and we would want to have the ability to tweak that as we needed to. So thank you, Madam Chair.
And I would just add to this, at this point, I don't support that being in the Constitution either. And could you make the case why the administration thinks it should be? I'm here that you describe that it's in there, but what's the why? I'm not hearing the why for the eligibility being constitutionalized.
Madam Chair, I think we would entertain any discussion on this if the committee chose to make a change to that one. We have spoken about that internally, and we understand the perspective you're coming from, and we'd certainly entertain a discussion on that.
And this is more of a finance table discussion, and I don't know if you could do any and bring back to us any rough numbers as far as if you were to change 2-year newcomer requirement, 90-day max out of state, and let's say 3 years being gone for legitimate reasons, but after 3 years you're no longer eligible. What kind of numbers are we talking as far as the people that would not be eligible? I think that's a good, it's really more for the finance table, but I think since this is part of the discussion, it's a good thing for you to be factoring. I would like more information I brought up about the fundamental right issue. What other things do we find in other state constitutions that really don't fall under that fundamental right? That was a question. The protection of the ERA, I was kind of surprised that wasn't in there, because as long as what we heard in the Wilikowski case, the legislature could just eat up that ERA. We got a alleged legal memo after the SB 26 passed, that the legislature does have the right to draw outside of that POMV. So there's nothing in this amendment that protects the ERA. So is that something the administration would also entertain and consider?
Madam Chair, we'd certainly entertain any, we'd enjoy any discussion on that. I think our view is that protection is put in place through the spending limit side. On the growth of government.
Mm-hmm.
So that was get to the point. That was the administration's perspective: how you keep spending in line so you don't overdraw the earnings reserve. It's through the spending cap.
Okay.
But if there's another idea, we'd certainly love to.
And then just a technical question, because you're taking this outside with the direct transfer to the program. And then the checks are issued. So technically, would this show up and come before our finance committees at all, or how would that technically work?
Madam Chair, I don't believe it would. The calculation would take place, and then those funds would transfer directly into the permanent fund dividend program to be distributed. So it would not be part of the appropriation process that this body is responsible for.
Okay, thank you. Senator Machicki.
Yeah, just on the eligibility requirements, I mean, that is a key issue, and I agree with the discussion. I mean, the hold harmless, if we change the days and state, the length and cause of or reason for an absence, or any other reason we may not know today, like you talked about extending it, I just don't know that that is I'm not sure that's something that people would be interested in voting on, frankly, but the fact that you'd have to wait a year if you were in dire straits financially and just decided to change the eligibility for the few people that are spend a little less time in the state of Alaska, right? So this is about protecting residents. That's what the program's about. Eligibility would be something else. It's usually dealing with someone who you may not regard as being qualified yet. It's not about taking the right away from the established Alaska residents. So the question, I was going to ask a different question, Madam Chair, and the question I was going to ask, if I may.
Please.
In Section C, so line 6 on page 2, it's interesting that you put the amount of the dividend instead of the dividend calculation, because you're actually supporting the SJR supports what was in statute on January 1 of 2019. So you would think that the dividend calculation would be a more appropriate choice of language in that line. Do you have any comments about?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, I can tell you the dividend calculation is what's intended through incorporating the existing statutes. You know, there's two statutes that calculate an amount of money that will move amount of permanent fund income that's transferred for a dividend program. So that's what we intended to convey, but I understand the point appears to be that the senator is making, that maybe there's another way to make it a little clearer.
Mm-hmm.
And, Senator Machicki?
And Madam Chair, I had another question, and I do think it's something that's something worth looking at. We're really preserving the dividend calculation. The amount of the dividend is not a part of this bill because we don't know what earnings are going to be. We don't know what's going to be available for distribution. So even if we went with the existing statutory calculation became constitutional, if this were to pass, the amount of the dividend is really not clear, but the statutory calculation is what you would be enshrining.
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, yes, I guess words do matter on these things, and I think, right, we're not talking about enshrining a definite number that will be the same every year. It's going back to the existing statutory formula that identifies an amount of income available that will be transferred for a dividend program. And, of course, that varies, as folks have mentioned, over the long history of the program.
Senator Machicki?
Yeah, one other question I had, and that was regarding I was going to drop a bill, as I discussed with my constituents, that were similar to this, except the folks that brought it to me when I agreed to carry it saw some value, and I see some economic value in quarterly payments. There were a lot of benefits to quarterly payments to the state as well as Alaskans. Do you see that a quarterly payment change could not occur? It's not eligibility. It's not the statutory calculation. It's simply the distribution method. If that were to occur, do you see that as being affected if this were to pass in the Constitution? So the same amounts distributed, just distributed in quarterly payments.
Yes, through the chair, Senator Machicki. I think a quarterly dividend, yeah, I mean, I think that would work because under the statute, what it's identifying is an amount of permanent fund income available for distribution. And that's a mathematical calculation. And then you take 50% of that income available, of that sum was available for distribution as dividends. So that sort of sounds like something that's not really part of the mathematical calculation, nor is it an eligibility issue. So I think that would be permissible, be outside the scope of the amendment, wouldn't be subject to voters' ratification.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Good discussion. I'm going to go back to the earlier topic about at the very top of page two, when we talk about provided by laws. It read on January 1st, 2019. We talked about the historical formula that's in the law, the POMV that's in the law. And I guess I'd like to know your best guess as to how, if we didn't change that, how a court would interpret that, which law would trump the other law if we got mathematically to the point where to pay the PFDs according to the historical formula would exceed the POMV draw. Which would draw? So would it stop with the POMV amount and then you'd have to divide that up by the population, or would the historical formula law trump? What's your best guess is how a court would interpret that?
Madam Chair, well, this would be a constitutional amendment. So the constitutional provision would supersede a statute that was describing a draw. So the Constitution amendment, if it was adopted like this, is saying there'll be a portion of income from the permanent fund that'll be used for a dividend program.
So the historical formula would trump the POMV law, because they're both in law as of January 1st. Right. So you're saying that the courts would interpret that even if mathematically the historical formula to pay it out to the residents would be more than the 5, let's say we're at the 5% point, that the Constitution would say you can exceed the law on the books that says 5%.
Madam Chair, if, again, on this hypothetical, the constitutional provision is going to govern. I mean, the court's going to look at what's the Constitution provide. It's providing for a portion of income for a program of dividends. As we've explained the proposal here, we've tracked what the Wilikowski case has described as the dividend program, which is the statutory formula for the amount of income to be transferred for payment of dividends. SB 26, of course, is our statute recently enacted addressing a percentage of market value draw, that sustainable percentage of market value draw. They're certainly related, but one's directly about the dividends, and it's our existing statutory framework that this amendment, as written, I believe, would govern.
Does this constitutional amendment require that the draw be from the POMV that's taken out, or could it be taken outside of that and the POMV could be used just for government?
Madam Chair, again, the constitutional amendment is addressing specifically income out of the permanent fund. So the POMV right now through SB 26 is a statute, important statute, but it is, I think you've alluded to your legislative legal opinion on the appropriations out of the earnings reserve account. SB 26 is a very important statutory provision, but it is ultimately, this amendment would directly address income out of the permanent fund, which right now under the Alaska Constitution is not identified as a percent POMV.
Right. I'm just wondering based on this reading, though, that if the POMV could be fully for the state spending, the budget, and then the draw could be on top of that. That's just, I'm not seeing anything preventing that from happening in this unless I'm missing something. Senator Keel.
Madam Chair, specifically at that point, I mean, going back and rereading SB 26, I think it prevents that, but it also argues strongly against what Mr. Milk said earlier, that this transfer in the Constitution is somehow trumps the statute in SB 26, because statute in SB 26 refers directly to the transfer for dividends and the transfer for or an appropriation that might go for government and is a law existing as it read on January 1 of 19. So this constitutional amendment would in fact set the SB 26 limit in stone. So I think the concern that we'd regularly go over 5% is not particularly one that I share, but the possibility of it limiting the dividend payout certainly I think is. But I'm not sure we can have it both ways either way. So if I'm wrong in one direction, I'm probably wrong in the other.
And I don't have a statute book right in front of me, but did the SB 26, when it talked about the draw, did it actually mention dividends in that, or was it just an amount available for appropriation?
Madam Chair, I believe it did not mention dividends because we couldn't come to a resolution on how to split it, so we just went to, again, to step one in settling on the amount that was sustainably drawn. So it didn't address how it would be spent.
So since this constitutional amendment would have the historical formula outside the appropriation process, then I would think that 5 or 5.25% appropriation draw could be used totally for government spending, and you could have the historical formula draw transfer outside of that. I'm just thinking maybe that this would allow that. Is that the administration's intention?
Madam Chair, I think I know exactly where you're going. They're on two separate paths, basically. The dividend would be addressed here. The POMV would be 5% drawn down to general fund to be spent. It's agnostic how you spend it. So I understand that your concern is that the dividend is going to be drawn, and then 5% might be drawn as well from the earnings reserve. I think we need to study that a little more and come back with in writing, we'll put a response together on how these interplay.
Okay.
And what the intent was.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Michicki?
Well, that's an excellent question. I mean, of course, what it would take for the POMV to be eaten up by a statutory permanent fund dividend would be 5 years, 20% earnings net of fees, which would be unprecedented in any market condition. That's something we've never seen before, but I think the point that you bring up is a good one. That's something we're going to have to understand. You know, we would, if this were to pass, we would have to dramatically revise Senate Bill 26 to reflect that automatic transfer, and the POMV would have to be net of that transfer in order to stay within the investment rules, disbursement rules that we assumed for that 5.25 down to 5 transfer of the POMV, or you're going to erode the earnings reserve very quickly. And that's today, that would probably be an 8.5% transfer, and that would potentially grow with time depending on earnings. So that would be extremely problematic.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, there's one comment to
Senator
that.
Show.
Which is circles back to what Bruce said before, which is why a spending limit with teeth, i.e. a constitutional spending limit, is so critical. Because if we go down this path and we pass this and there's not a spending limit to constrain government growth and spending, we are setting ourselves up to fail. Mm-hmm. There's almost no way around that as far as I see. If you were to go down this path without the other, we're in trouble. So just for what it's worth, as we finally, because all those are great questions, but I think that's back to your point of these are kind of as a package deal. Mm-hmm. You could do the spending limit without this, okay. This without spending limit, we're probably in trouble. So for what it's worth.
And I will concur with that. In fact, I was frustrated they couldn't be constitutionally in the same amendment because it makes me nervous having them separated because I don't want to paint ourselves into a corner where we have to pass taxes. So with that, we're at time. We've lost some members due to the Resource Committee meeting starting up. So what we're going to do is we're going to set this bill aside, bring it up at a later date. So if members have any amendments on SJR 5, I ask that you have them to my office by 6 p.m. on Wednesday. I also want to remind members that we will hold public testimony on this bill tonight at 6 p.m., and we are asking testifiers to limit their testimony to 1 minute, and to be they must be signed in by 7 p.m. in order to testify. So with that, are there any further comments before we adjourn? I'm seeing none, and with no other business before the committee, let the record reflect the time is 3:26, and we are adjourned.
This is Danae calling in for a sound check.
Sound check. Testifier mic.
Sounds good.
Mic check.
Sounds good.
Mic check.
Sounds good.
Mic check.
Sounds good.
Mic check.
Sounds good.
Microphone check.
Sounds good.
Second to last mic.
Sounds good.
Last mic.
All righty. Sounds great.
Thanks, Dan.
You're welcome.
Good evening. I'm calling the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today is Monday, April 8th. Let the record reflect the time is 6 p.m. Today we have present Senator Keel and myself, Chair Hughes. A quorum is not required in order to conduct public testimony. I do know members have let me know that they are listening on the phone. Thank you for those using their evening hours to be here. We appreciate you, those that are assisting us. We have one item on the agenda. We'll be taking public testimony on Senate Joint Resolution 5, Constitutional Amendment, Permanent Fund and Dividends, sponsored by the Governor. We are asking those wishing to testify to please keep their testimony limited to 1 minute, and anyone wishing to testify must be signed up by 7 p.m. We also encourage anyone listening, whether you are able to testify or not before our time is up, we ask that you send your testimony in writing to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. And we have instructed our Legislative Information Office operator to move on to the next testifier after 1 minute. So that's another reason why you might want to submit your testimony in writing so we get all of it in case you don't get finished in that 1 minute allotment. Before we begin, are there any questions or comments from the committee? Member, singular?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Seeing none, we're going to open public testimony. As we do, I ask that you state your name, please, and then I would like you to say at the beginning of your testimony whether you support or oppose SJR 5 before you proceed with your rest of your testimony. That way we are able to accurately get a tally of where the public stands this evening on this particular constitutional amendment. So with that, I'm going to it's first come, first serve, so I'm going to go to the person who signed in the earliest and has been waiting the longest, and that would be Kristen Bush from Eagle River. Welcome, Kristen, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record, and at the beginning of your testimony, please indicate whether you support or oppose SJR 5.
My name is Kristen Bush. I am in support of SJR 5. In November 1976, voters approved the constitutional amendment establishing the permanent fund by approximately 75,000 yes to 38,000 no, a fact the Senate and legislature have ignored. It was constitutional. Revisiting this issue now is almost absurd, but yes, We do want the original formula and the permanent fund dividend in the Constitution. If you want to revise the formula, lower our required calculation payout, you can bet you should be having us vote on it as it was originally. Meanwhile, return what is stolen, utilize the correct payout formula, and keep your hands off the people's portion of the PFD. It's not yours until voters say otherwise. I would remind you of the committee statement from 1982 by the legislature. The committee intends that the payment of dividends shall have first call on 50% of the income of the permanent fund available for distribution, regardless of what other uses the income is put to. First call. And all we're asking for is that we vote on this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bush. We appreciate your testimony. In Anchorage, Diane Holmes, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate your opposition or support for the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
Diane Holmes, I do not pass this bill. It's a little hard for me to understand all of it, but I get the idea that it's about constitutionalizing and setting aside, I think, up to 50% of the revenues for the PFD. Do not do it. The PFD will not buy troopers, teachers, or roads. And if the permanent fund, the permanent fund is really meant to fund state services, and that includes the poor who might use them more than the rest of us. Even if we get $10, it's still a gift. We didn't earn this. The permanent fund is for our services. And please, if this is also contains information about a spending cap, and I do not approve of any attempt for a spending cap, because you cannot ever tell what you will need this for. Look at the emergency, look at the earthquake we had in emergency services, or you don't know how many prisoners or rehabilitation services you're going to need, or keeping employees with salaries and benefits. It would be a huge mistake to put a spending cap and to constitutional.
Thank you, Ms. Holmes, for your testimony. I encourage you to please email to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. We're trying to stick to that 1 minute out of respect for the others waiting. I would like the record to reflect, too, that a few minutes ago, Senator Michiki joined us. Now we'll go to Eagle River. Chris Eichenlaub, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SGR 5, please, and before you complete the rest of your testimony.
Okay, this is Chris Eichenlaub for the record, and I do fully support SGR 5, and pretty much like Chris and Bush said, they voted. Why are we here now? I mean, it's because lawmakers didn't follow the law. They broke the law. So now we have to do something else to make it more clear that this is the law. Please don't break it. That money is not intended for those purposes. And when people say that they're doing this to save the permanent fund, that's what they did. They're not saving the permanent fund by making the larger draws on it, like the POMD. That is a larger draw. It will take the permanent fund to zero. It's not the easy button. So let's go fish. And that's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eichenlaub. And Soldatna John Morin, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record. Indicate at the beginning of your testimony your support or opposition to SJR 5, please.
Yes, my name is John Morin. I am in support of SJR 5 and then set that up for the people. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morin. I apologize for mispronouncing your last name. Thank you for joining us. Out of Big Lake, welcome Joanne Truett. Thank you for joining the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record. And at the beginning of your testimony, please indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5, please.
Yeah, my name is Joan Truett, and I am in support of SJR 5. It needs to be constitutionalized again to keep everybody's fingers out of the pot. And the PFD, if there's any changes that need to be voted on, it needs to be voted on by the people. That is the people's money. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joan, for joining us. Glenn Hyken from Nanana, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Glenn, please state your name for the record and indicate up front your support or opposition before proceeding with the rest of your testimony.
Yes, I'm Glenn Hyken from Nanana, Alaska, and I'm in support of SJR 5. Very much so. We need to protect the permanent fund dividend, and if necessary, get government spending under reins to balance the budget. I'm a lifelong Alaskan, born and raised up here. My parents homesteaded in the 60s. I've seen this whole process come and go with government spending getting more and more and more over the last 40 years of oil revenues. The permanent fund is, you know, it belongs to the people. It's the lands of the state of Alaska belong to the people, and the permanent fund revenues belong to the people, and that needs to be protected. So unequivocally, I'm in support of SGR 5. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hyken, for joining us this evening. Tracy Apollo in Wasilla, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to the resolution before proceeding with the rest of your testimony.
Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Tracy Apollo. I am in support of the governor's bill, and shame. Most of us have been up here a very long time, since the 60s. Here, myself, Hammond, when we saw and read the bill that was written, we thought, no, that's silly. The governor's put too much verbiage in here. They would never go to take that money. And lo and behold, yes, they are. Yes, they do. They want that money. He wrote this very meticulous bill to protect the PFD for the people. I'm in support of the bill, and I ditto everything Ms. Bush said in the beginning. Very well done. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy, for joining us this evening. Next, we'll go to the Matsu LIO. Beth Fried is online. Welcome, Beth. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition before proceeding with the rest of your testimony. Ms. Fried, we can't hear you. Is it muted?
They muted it and we unmuted it.
Okay, we can hear you now. Go ahead and state your name, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Beth Fried. I live in the Greater Palmer area. I am of two minds on SJR 5. Yes, I believe the permanent fund dividend needs to be placed into the Constitution, and I believe that the law from 2018 should be used instead of the law from 2019. I know SB 26 was passed in 2019, and if January 1, 2019 equals December 31, 2018, I would say go ahead and pass this immediately, and I would appreciate a vote of the people should any other breaking of the law occur in the legislature. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fried, for joining the Senate Judiciary Committee. And now to Yakutat, Patrick Mayer, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record, indicate your support or opposition to the resolution, and then proceed with your testimony.
Okay, greetings, Chair Hughes and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Patrick Mayer, and I'm a longtime Alaska resident currently living in Yakutat. I have previously testified in opposition to both SB 23 and SB 24. Similarly, I stand in opposition to SJR 5. The prospect of us as a state paying out full dividends while not meeting our financial obligations, the primary obligation of which is the constitutional priority of funding education, is unacceptable. While the PFD may be important, it should not be a choice between funding public education or cutting education by 25% in order to pay for the PFD. As a 35-year resident of the state of Alaska and the father of three voting children, let's also not dismantle the infrastructure of our great state and encourage those citizens that are not already doing so to move elsewhere. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Next in Fox, Lynette Clark, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record. Indicate your support or opposition to the resolution before you proceed with the rest of your testimony.
I'm Lynette Clark. I live in Fox, Alaska. I fully support SJR 5 and what it proposes, a vote by Alaskans. Since the inception of the PSD and historically, any change had been voted on by the Alaska shareholders. That's the history. That was until Commissar Walker made his move to steal those monies right before our very eyes. Successive legislatures followed in suit in almost German lockstep. As a shareholder in these royalties, I say again, no theft or change to PFDs without a vote of Alaskans, period. There's a payment formula, state statute to give direction for that payment of those dividends. I want that followed, respected, and complied with. I want a vote, and I want a full PFD check after all. It is payment for the loss of subsurface rights and the government duty to follow, not ignore. I will close with this. There is a big red pin in the right man's hand, and with the Constitution in mind, is the...
Thank you very much, Ms. Clark, for your testimony. I encourage you to submit it in writing to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. Up in Fairbanks, Hayden Nezel, please state your name for the record, indicate your support or opposition to the resolution, and proceed with your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is Hayden Nezel. I'm in Fairbanks, and I am opposed to SJR 5. And the reason I'm opposed is because although it sounds great on the surface to constitutionalize the PFD, having it embedded in our state constitution doesn't allow us any future flexibility. It can prevent future lawmakers from doing the job that we elect them to do. And if we're going to send them to Juneau and not allow them to do their jobs, then why are we electing them anyway? The PFD formula should be able to be adjusted over time to keep the balance on account as healthy as possible. You know, as the oil prices and production numbers shift and the balance in the account goes up or down, the formula should be able to be adjusted just to keep our state afloat. There will always be plenty of public pressure, as there already is, to pay out a sizable PFD. And a constitutional amendment is not needed and is too inflexible of a tool to be used this way. And I'd just like to state that, you know, it's important to note that the PFD is a liberal style program. It is a universal basic income. And for that, I love it. And I know a lot of people that are on the, especially the lowest income levels, really rely on the PFD, and I want to have it stay there. But we have to have a state that actually can function also. And so we need to have some flexibility where our lawmakers can make some,
Thank you, Hayden. I encourage you to submit your testimony in writing to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. In Juneau, Kathy Swanson, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to the resolution before proceeding with the rest of your testimony.
Hello, I'm Kathy Swanson, calling from Juneau. I am totally in support of SJR 5. The reason being that obviously, we need it. Now, for those who suggest that they don't need their PFDs, I would suggest to them that they simply donate them to the state. But for the people who do need them, that struggle with the high cost of fuel, particularly our people in the bush, who were given no notice whatsoever that that income wasn't coming in. No, that's necessary, and it's necessary to put it in the Constitution. Our legislators have an appetite for money that is unquenchable. And as much as you give them, they will spend that and more. I am totally in favor of this amendment and of our governor. Go Dunleavy.
Thank you, Ms. Swanson, for your testimony this evening. Richard Russell of Palmer, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name and indicate your support or opposition at the beginning of your testimony.
Yes, my name is Richard Russell. I'm calling from Palmer, and I and my family are in favor of SJ5 simply because we feel that the permanent fund should be written into the Constitution. One of the things that nobody seems to be addressing is the effect on the Alaska economy, and it's not just the somewhat lower income. And we'd like to see things put in the Constitution instead of just handled each session by the legislature. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. In Anchorage, Faye Saron, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name and then indicate your support or opposition to the resolution and proceed with your testimony. Faye, is your phone muted? You want to... Yes, we can hear you now. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition and proceed.
I'm sorry, I didn't know you were saying Faye Saron. Okay, my name is Faye Saron. I live in Anchorage, Alaska, and I voted for Governor Dunleavy, and he is in support of the PFE, and I don't think the legislature has any business coming against what he has said he's going to do. He's the governor. They are not. And I wish the legislature would just not even make us do this, you know, beg for our money back. This is our money, and they don't really need it because they are overspending the money. I said that last time, and I'm saying it again. The more you give them, the more they spend. It should just leave it. Let the people have the money like this. It's called permanent dividend. That means it's permanent. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Faye. And to be clear, Faye, just to be clear, it was the connection was a little poor at the beginning. Can you tell us, yes, you support or no, you do not support? We just want to make sure we have got.
I shouldn't be driving, but I am. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Could you say yes or no as to whether you support?
Yes, I support giving us back our dividend. I support everything that Governor Dunleavy promised us.
Thank you.
I don't want the legislature getting in there and taking that dividend away from us.
Thank you very much, Faye. Next, Chugiak, Valerie Prince. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Valerie, please state your name for the record and then indicate at the beginning of your testimony whether you support or oppose SJR 5.
My name is Valerie Prince. I'm calling from Chugiak, Alaska, and I support SJR 5. I believe and I know that this is true, that Alaska is an owner state. That means the people of Alaska own the resources of the state. And this is the way that the permanent fund was set up. I know this because I was here when it happened. The owners, that's the residents, must be asked by a yes or no vote if any changes are to be made to the PFD. Any politicians, if they're allowed to get their hands on it, it'll be gone. That's the way it works. This is the people's money. It is not to be changed. Nobody is to appropriate or to touch the money unless you ask the people who own the money if they are willing for that to happen. And that means it should be a vote for the people, and it should be in the Constitution. What we need to do is cut spending. Cut spending, cut spending. It may hurt. It may be uncomfortable.
Thank you very much, Ms. Prince. We appreciate you joining us. Please, I encourage you to submit your testimony in writing to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. In Anchorage, James Santoro, welcome, Mr. Santoro, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate at the beginning of your testimony your support or opposition to SJR 5.
Hello, my name is James Santoro from Anchorage, Alaska, and I represent myself and my wife, Liliana Santoro, and we both opposed SJR 5. Everyone likes free money, but we're running out of money, and we are owner state, but we got to pay our bills. And no one, these same people that want to support this also don't want to pay taxes. Nobody wants to pay taxes, but everybody wants their services. And I really think this place will go in a recession with Dunleavy's budget, and we got to do the right thing, and the right thing is to pay our bills and take care of our old and our young first. Thank you,
Mr. Santoro. Herman Morgan is calling out of Antioch. Welcome, Mr. Morgan. Please state your name for the record and indicate your opposition or support for SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony?
Yeah, I support SJR 5. And one other thing, you guys better investigate Alaska Information Gobble, because they're not even showing it on the Alaska Information Channel. The last time they had testimony, they really garbled. You guys couldn't hear it. You need to give the people back the money that belongs to them. And you got the legislature or there, they went through the savings, and then now they're going after the permanent fund. A lot of people need that money. It'll bring 25,000 Alaskans to live above the poverty level. So please don't use Governor Walker's old budget. Follow Governor Dunleavy's new budget, because the state's going broke and we can't spend money we don't have. We don't do it privately, and you guys shouldn't be doing that. Take money away from the people who need it the most. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. And out of Wasilla, Tyler Dias, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record. Indicate at the beginning of your testimony your support or opposition to SJR 5, please.
Hi, my name is Tyler Dias. I support SJR 5. A shame that it's come to this where we need to vote on something like this. I think it was pretty clear when the permanent fund was set up what it was intended for. It was not to fund state government. There's a lot of common sense things that I think could be done to raise revenue for the state, and it looks like everybody's going after the low-hanging fruit. That we're still putting money into the PFD every year. I think if you guys want to raise revenue for the state, start looking at that. Start looking at high-income earners receiving the PFD. I don't really need the PFD, but I don't think it's fair that people make $5,000-$10,000 a year are going to suffer. You know, especially I see all these Democrats that are supporting this, and I'm laughing because they're hurting their constituents most. It's the most regressive tax that I've ever seen. So, my kids, I'm going to save every penny of their PFP. They're likely to have $100,000 to $150,000 to go to college with. I think a lot of Alaskans do that for their children, and it's just going to be a shame if you guys mess with this formula. And
thank you very much, Tyler, for your testimony this evening. I encourage you to submit it to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. And next, we're going to go to Bert Hutaling, and I need to learn how to pronounce your last name, Bert. I apologize for butchering it. Please state your name and then indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony, please.
Hello, my name is Bert Hufteling, and I am in full support of SJR 5. Protect the PFD under the original formula, put it into Alaska's constitution, and hands off our PFD. We got a bloated budget that's overspending. I was unfortunate enough to be able to watch Gavel and Gavel today and watch everything you guys in the House and the Senate did, and really ashamed listening to you one after another saying, oh, we can't cut that, without even knowing what you can't cut. No new taxes, rebuild and replace the crime bill. Tell them to cap the budget also while we're at it. There's several sensible things out there you can do. Restructure the school districts, make them one district. That will save millions of dollars right there. There's so many different options to reduce the budget that you guys are not even exploring and that you need to be forcing the people with their hands out to start doing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hautelling. Appreciate you joining us this evening. Gail Motto from Nunilchik, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record. Indicate your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, I'm Gail Motto. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. I am in support of SJR 5. This is because the original formula of the PFD distributes money between the state and the citizens. It is payment for goods is what it is, because as was stated before, the Alaska citizens own the mineral rights, and therefore these revenues are because of sales of goods, and it's distributed to where the state gets 50% and the citizens get 50%, and that's the way it should remain. If we were to take a public vote right now, every one of Dunleavy's 145,631 votes would say maintain the permanent fund as it was originally formulated. I would bet that at least 25% of Bagage's votes would say the same thing. We need to have better budgeting on the part of the state, and the citizens should receive.
Thank you. And before we lose you, we didn't hear you say your name at the beginning, and I just want to make sure we have it right. Gail, could you please state your name?
Okay, I don't know what's happening. My name is Gail Moto.
Thank you.
Mother Ninilchik.
Thank you, Ms. Moto. Next in Ninilchik, John Christensen. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record and indicate at the beginning of your testimony your opposition or support of SJR 5.
Yeah, my name is John Christensen, and I'm for returning the money to the public, and mostly because state government wasted the money when we had it. People went for the school in schools, but yet we pay the highest cost for our schools and we have the lowest benefit from it. We have the worst outcome in our school system. That's, money's not doing that, and we need to know where the money is going if our students aren't receiving it. And I think there's a lot better management stuff. And plus, it's only the rich people who don't want to pay taxes. Most of us, we don't mind paying a little tax here and there to help support things. I think that if that was truly checked out, you would find it's people make $100 or more. I made, maybe $20,000 last year. A few taxes ain't going to make that much difference out of my income at that point. And, and I worked my butt off just to get that. So I put the tax of people and put it in the Constitution. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Christensen, for joining us this evening. Senator Michikee wants to make a statement.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. We're here to learn how Alaskans feel about SJR 5, which is placing the PFD in the Constitution and enshrining it there. Essentially in perpetuity if the people choose to vote that way. So we really need to hear how you feel about it. Folks are kind of veering off on a lot of different subjects, but this hearing is about SJR 5, and that is protecting the PFD and the Constitution.
Right, and I don't, it does trigger a lot of other conversation, but if you could keep it on the PFD, that would be helpful. Next in Soldotna, Gail Limbaugh-Moore. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate at the beginning of your testimony your support or opposition to SJR 5, please.
Yes, Gail Limbaugh-Moore, and I am in support of SJR 5. That concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Limbaugh-Moore. Big Lake, Mike Whitney, welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5 and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, Mike Whitney, chairman of Save the PFD Group, Big Lake, Alaska. I am for SJR 5. Of course, the people should have a vote. That goes without saying in a representative democracy, especially after 30 years of a calculation of our PFD, how it was supposed to be paid out, when it was supposed to be paid out. There was never a problem until the overspending occurred for the past approximately 10 years. We have to rein in the spending, and we have to have a protection of what Governor Hammond and the creators of the Permanent Fund gave us. He warned what would happen when they had spent their share. They were going to come for our share. That we're at that point now, and I urge each representative to follow representative democracy, the principles of democracy, and let us vote for what we want. We've already voted for Dunleavy, so everybody knows that was a mandate, so I think we've already stated that. But
Thank you, Mr. Whitney. I encourage you to submit your testimony in writing if you'd like to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. In North Pole, Jack Johnson, welcome. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition at the beginning of your testimony to the resolution.
Hi, my name is Jack Johnson. I am fully in support of SGR 5. We need to ensure that that is placed upon our Constitution. And only the people of the state of Alaska can do any change to our PFD. We put it into the Constitution and put it by vote of the people, then the people themselves can change it, and not the chosen few who have a tendency to say that they want to support us, people who want to defend the PFD, but when it comes time to voting, they're in Juneau, they have a tendency to vote the other way. We need to ensure that the people of Alaska have a voice when it comes to the PFD. And until then, we cannot do it. So therefore, I am in support of SGR 5 so that we incorporate that into our Constitution so each and every one of us can vote on whether or not we want to change that item. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. In Tokes, Scott McManus has joined us. Welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition at the beginning of your testimony to SJR 5, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott McManus, and I'm speaking in opposition of SJR 5. The permanent fund was set up initially as a way to replace the non-renewable resource of oil with a renewable resource of investment. And it was intended to make sure that services to the state of Alaska and the residents of the state of Alaska, including education and ferries and senior citizen payouts and the PCE credit and things like that, which benefit those in the rural parts of the state that don't benefit necessarily from employment rates. And it was intended to offset that and not necessarily turn Alaska into an entitlement state, which I believe the permanent fund has become. The number one beneficiary, and this is one of my biggest gripes, of the permanent fund is the federal government in the form of taxes. Between $150 million and $200 million from the permanent fund every year goes to the federal government. That's money that should be staying in the state. And I'll just leave it at that, and there you go.
Thank you, Mr. McManus. We appreciate your testimony this evening. Next, from Juneau, Katie Botts, welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record and indicate at the beginning of your testimony your support or opposition to SJR 5, please.
Hi, my name is Katie Botts, and I am in opposition to SJR 5. Just as the person before me stated, the original and intention of the PFD was to fund the state government, fund the education, transportation, fund the pioneer home, medical, anything and everything that the state needed to be funded. And it is an entitlement to the people of Alaska to get a free check that they did not earn from the state government, and that entitlement needs to stop. And I'm saying that as a 31-year-old citizen of Juneau, Alaska, and I don't think it's teaching anyone anything about work ethics. And it's only teaching them to be a lazy person. So thank you.
Thank you, Katie, for joining us this evening. We're going to go to the Homer LIO. Welcome, Adam Hikes, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record, and at the beginning of your testimony, please indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5.
Hi, my name is Adam Hikes. I am in full support of SJR 5, and rather than use some logical argument that many before me have spoken, I'm going to take this a little different route. I speak to those who seek to enslave a free people. You will yourselves be enslaved. Your wicked deeds and unrighteous acts will be exposed. Those who seek to pervert justice will themselves face justice. Turn back and you will be shown mercy, but continue in your evil deeds and you will be removed. And this concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Hikes, for your input this evening. At the Fairbanks LIO, welcome Luke Hopkins to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate at the beginning of your testimony your support or opposition to the resolution, please.
Yes, thank you, Senator Hughes and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee that are present. I am Luke Hopkins. I am opposed to moving SJR 5 forward. I do not support this. The representation that we have in our elected officials that are represented by the legislators make these appropriations every year from the earnings reserve, and that is how it was set up to be done. Every year I say thank you for the check that is received through the permanent fund dividend program, and I want this constitution to stay, to remain as it is, and not be put before the voters that every time a statute comes forward where the appropriations are made by the legislature. I don't think that's what was intended with the Constitution, and I want to see that to remain for the state of Alaska. Thank you very much for my time.
Thank you very much, Luke, for joining us this evening. And next we will go to Anchorage. Ray Smith, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate at the beginning of your testimony your support or opposition to SJR 5.
My name is Ray Smith. I'm in support of SJR 5. Anybody who thinks you give money to a politician and their motivation is to save it or do the right thing, I think is really out, not realistic, almost like you check your common sense at the door when you get off the plane in Juneau. Really, the people of the state of Alaska, you gave it to them once. To take it away now, there's a lot of families that absolutely need that to survive. I don't know what your expectation is for them to do, get a job that isn't there. But I myself, I can take it either way. I have a little problem with the socialist aspect, but I can get over that because once given, you can't take it back. Keep that money going for a lot of people. If somebody wants to give it back, that's fine. But there's a lot of people that need that money.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, for your testimony. Out of Fairbanks, Rebecca Dunn, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record. And at the beginning of your testimony, please indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5.
Hi, thank you for taking my testimony. I am opposed to SJR 5. Although I support a universal basic income on principle, enshrining the PFD in the Constitution is not the way to do it. Our biggest state expenditure is giving away little bits of money to individuals, and we've only had this expenditure for a few decades, not since time began and not even since statehood. We have a representative government, and we trust our representatives to make decisions about the state budget, including using available state revenue and establishing new sources of revenue. As we all know, oil revenues are not going to last forever. This bill would cripple the legislature and bankrupt the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Tanya Lang in Kenai, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record, and at the beginning of your testimony, indicate, please, your support or opposition to SJR 5.
My name is Tanya Lang, and I am in full support of SJR 5. I represent myself, my fiancé, Stephen Orbell, and our five grown children. Basically, the problem is the spending in the government. We have a lot of programs, a lot of issues that we spend money on that is unnecessary. The spending has to be controlled. Anytime any amount of money is given to the government, they're going to spend it. A lot of people count on this money to survive, to finance their families, and this money needs to be protected for the people. Any change to our PFD needs to be a vote of the people. We elected Dunleavy for a reason, and that is to protect our PFD and our families. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lang. In North Pole, Barbara Haney, welcome. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to the resolution, and then proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Barbara Haney. I'm an economist. I represent myself. I support SJR 5. You know, I often wonder if the people of Venezuela had a PSD fund instead of a government that spent the money, if they might not be in a better shape today. The major beneficiary of the PFD is the people of Alaska, not the federal government. It's for the people. It's for the private sector. And I wholeheartedly support SJR 5. And I think when you look at the votes across the state in the governor's race, this was the signature issue of Governor Dunleavy. And I think it'll win. I wholeheartedly support SJR 5. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Barbara, for joining us. Carl Norman and Seward, welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record. And at the beginning of your testimony, please indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5.
Good afternoon or good evening. My name is Carl Norman. I'm an enthusiastic supporter of SJR 5. I lived in Alaska. I have lived in Alaska since 1951. I was a youngster when my family brought me here. I remember what it was like without the permanent fund adding a little extra income to Alaskan families. It wasn't a lot of fun. But anyway, I think Governor Dunleavy is exactly on the right track with SJR 5. It needs to be put to a vote of the people if the permanent fund is to be infringed by politicians. The state has been, for the last several years, operating in what a business would call a negative cash flow. That leads to ultimate bankruptcy. I don't care if it's a business, a state, a city, or what entity it is. Negative cash flow does not work. You can't fix it by taking the money from Alaskan citizens that they've counted on for generation or two or more. I mean, that money is very important to a majority of Alaskans. It's not to be divvied.
Thank you, Mr. Norman. Please encourage you to submit your testimony in writing to the Senate Judiciary Committee at senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. And Homer Terry Cotton, welcome. Please state your name for the record, and at the beginning of your testimony, indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5.
My name is Terry Cotton. I'm from Homer, Alaska. I support SJR 5 fully. Our legislation has overspent and overspent for years now, and now all they want to do is take the money from the people of the state and spend it in an improper manner. I don't trust our legislators to do their job anymore. They all need to be relieved. But so I support that it go to the Constitution, and we, the people of Alaska, make that vote. I've been here since I was 12 years old, 1959, and I don't like the way our government is treating its residents. I fully support SJR 5.
Thank you, Mr. Cotton. Tim Staton in Fairbanks, please indicate your name for the record, and at the beginning of your testimony, your support or opposition to SJR 5.
Hi, my name is Tim Staton, and I am in Fairbanks, and I am in fully support of SJR 5. I believe that this should be enshrined in the Constitution. I believe that Al Adams, chair of House and Finance Committee, wrote in 1982 that the committee intends for the payment of the dividends shall have first call of 50% of the income of the permanent fund available for distribution regardless of what other uses of income is put to. We also have taken out over $1 billion in our economy, which has caused a recession. This is important to know that the retail economy is suffering by this action from legislators who have been in the legislature for many years that could have prevented it by using the money they had wisely instead of frivolously spending it. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. We appreciate your testimony. From Juneau, Bob Swanson, please indicate your name for the record and your opposition or support for SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Yes, hi, good evening. Thank you for the opportunity. My name is Bob Swanson. I'm in total support of SJR 5. I just believe that we can't have champagne taste on a beer budget, and pretty much with you, how much ever money you give a legislature, they're going to spend it and spend it and spend it and spend it. So we need to bring SJR 5, and it should be a vote in front of the people to decide how we're going to spend our money or not spend our money. And so it's not an entitlement, what we have going on today with our social services programs, and a lot of programs that we don't need in the state are truly entitlements. This is money, and it's oil royalty money that we're given to by being residents of the state. So, again, I totally support SJR 5, and we should totally look to repeal SB 91 because we have a crime wave going on in Juneau that's unbelievable. I've been here since statehood, and I have a hard time believing that we can't repeal us, SB 91. Thank you for letting me share that.
Thank you, Mr. Swanson. James Squires, welcome to Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Yeah, my name is James Squires. I'm from rural Deltona. I'm representing myself and my wife, Pam Good. We both support SJR 5 as a package of constitutional amendments that need to come before Alaskans. When comparing to the POMV model, you can improve the cash flow triage by correcting the inflation proofing calculation from applying the inflation rate to the value of the principal to applying it properly to the cost basis of the principal. That calculation's an error. It would help the cash flow a lot if you sorted that out. That concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Squires. We appreciate you joining us. Jeff May and Wasilla, welcome. Please state your name and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, Jeff May. I'm in Wasilla. I'm a 25-year resident of Alaska. I do support SJR 5, and I would like to hand the phone to my wife so she can testify.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Sandy May. I am a 43 resident of Alaska and live in Wasilla, and I totally support SJR 5.
Thank you, Jeff and Sandy, for your testimony
Thank
this
you,
evening.
Sally.
Good to hear your voice. Elizabeth Sweet in North Pole, welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Sweet, and I support SJR 5 because I count on that money. It helps me pay my bills. And I also can't talk about the people. He's right. They should turn away from their wicked deeds. And I support SRJ 5. Thank you and good night.
Thank you, Ms. Sweet. You have a good night as well. In Petersburg, Marietta Davis, welcome. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony. It looks like Marietta, is your phone muted? It looks like you've dropped off. Next, we'll go to Jeff Nelton in Wasilla. Welcome, Jeff. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition at the beginning of your testimony, please.
Yes, I'm Jeff Nelson. I'm from Wasilla, Alaska. I'm in full support of SJR 5. I've lived here for 30 years, and I believe that the lawmakers are stealing the money that was rightly given to the people of Alaska. It is a investment that each one of us has done, and the fact that they're stealing money from us without our say-so is a crime against the people of Alaska, and they should be put to justice for it. Thank you for my time.
Thank you for joining.
Full support of it.
Yes, thank you, Jeff, for joining us. Amber Manley, Big Lake, please state your name and indicate your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
This is Amber Manley. I live in Big Lake, Alaska. I'm in full support.
Thank you, Amber, for your testimony this evening. Next, we'll go to Corey Martin. Welcome, Mr. Martin, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony. Looks like we have lost Corey, so we'll go to Palmer next. Sally Johnson, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your supporter opposition to the SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, I'm Sally Johnson, and I am behind SJR 5. I want it to go. Our PFD needs to be in the Constitution as Jay Hammond wrote that original formula. I, too, believe that the legislature is stealing money from the people, and you guys need to tighten up and listen to our governor and make these cuts. Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you, Sally, for joining us. Also in Palmer, Chad Wemple, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your supporter opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, this is Chad Wemple. I live in Palmer. I am in support of Dunleavy, the SJR 5, 100%. I think all the politicians that are thinking that they want to snatch this away from the citizens should probably think twice and see who we voted into office. And if you notice, the percentage of people, we're the vocal majority. This isn't the vocal minority. Look who got voted into office. If you guys take our money and try to keep servicing an ever-expanding budget and writing checks that y'all can't cash, we're going to vote you out. So if you like being a politician, you better play nice and not try to steal our money. You know, I'm just a simple guy, but it don't take much for me to see what y'all are doing, trying to write checks you can't cash. Look what's happened for the last decade. This is, you know, that's not inflation. That's insanity. Our budget's just spiraling perpetually out of control. And this is you guys.
Thank you, Mr. Wemple. We appreciate hearing from you this evening. In Wasilla, Robert Jewett, please state your name for the record. Indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Robert Jewett from Wasilla, Alaska. I am in full support of SJR 5. I've lived in Alaska for almost 50 years. I was here when Governor Hammond set the fund up. And I distinctly remember him saying that this was for the people and always would be for the people, would never be for the state bureaucracy to spend. And the fact is that this fund goes to every man, woman, and child in Alaska. It touches every single village. It touches every place in Alaska. There's nowhere that the legislature could take this money and use it to where it affected every man, woman, and child in a beneficial way. It affects our economy, and it does help people who may need a little bit of extra money and certainly stimulates our economy. There's nothing that the government has ever done to do that, and I don't think it's possible for them to do that. So I'm in full support. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Jewett. And Anderson, Tim, and Nikon, I apologize if I mispronounced your last name. Please indicate your name and your supporter opposition to SJR 5, please, at the beginning of your testimony.
I am in complete support of SJR 5. I represent myself and my fiance, Rhonda Schultz. She is also in support of SJR 5. As rural Alaskans, older couple on a fixed income, we have struggled mightily over the last 3 years to try and make it through the winter without the PFD in order to to bring in the necessary propane to heat our cabin. Not to mention the effect that removing those monies from the local economy has had. Businesses going out of business. We've got one right now that's transferring in Healy because they can't afford to stay in business anymore. It's a loss of income to everybody in the area. SJR 5 needs to be passed because if the legislature is going to take the money that was originally intended from the PFD, they need to have the authority of the people to do so. It needs to be a representative government, the way this country was set up. The people of this state need to have a voice in how that money is spent, not simply taken from us by legislatures and bureaucrats. Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you, Tim. Could you please state your name for the record? We didn't catch that at the beginning.
Tim Enikin.
Thank you, Tim.
Anderson, Alaska.
Appreciate it. Thank you. And I understand, Corey Martin, that you're back online, so we'll try again. Please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to SJR 5, please, at the beginning of your testimony.
My name is Corey Martin. I live in Chisachina, Alaska, pretty rural, and I'm in full support of SJR 5. It has made it extremely difficult, up to the point that I am now almost having to move out of Alaska just to live. With the taking of the PFD from the people, we count on this in rural communities. This has been an extreme hardship on me. You know, not only me, most everybody around my area. We are very rural. We count on this to live and survive and pay our bills, you know. And for the people, politicians of Alaska, just to take that money from us, low-income people that need that to survive on, should be illegal. You know, I'm in full support of SJR 5. I want this to go through. I believe that anything to do with the PFD should be voted on by the people. We need to have a voice. I'm begging you guys. I'm asking, begging, please pass this. Please support it. We need to open this up. We need this money to survive on. I'm on pins and needles here because I don't know if I'm going to be.
Thank you very much, Mr. Martin. I encourage you to submit any more testimony you have to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. We're going to go to the Fairbanks LIO, Elise Guttenberg. Welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. This is Elise Guttenberg in Fairbanks, and I am opposed to SJR 5. Whatever you think about the PFD and how it should be spent or saved for the people is fine, but it does not belong in the Constitution. Our legislators have been elected to do the best job that they can through a representative government, which has been working fine, and the legislature has the flexibility to respond to the needs of the state in the future. If this were to be passed, then every single time there would be any change to the PFD, whether it was eligibility, whether it was amount, it would have to go again and again to the vote of the people. And I think it's much more appropriate to have it stay with the legislature and not be enshrined in the Constitution. Leave the Constitution as it is. It's a wonderful document. Thank you.
Thank you, Elise, thank you for your testimony this evening. And I'm going to note that it's 7 p.m. And so if you have not called in at this point, we're taking those who remain on the line. So if you're watching online and you missed that 7 o'clock cutoff, you can email the committee your testimony, senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. Next in Wasilla, Linda Hannenberg, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to the resolution, please, at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, my name is Linda Hannenberg. I'm in total support of SJR 5. I have noticed from a number of people that I am surrounded with that depend on that amount of money, the PFD, to survive throughout the year. They do their car repairs. They don't have additional cash throughout the year. So when they get the PFD, they do their car repairs. They pay bills, medical bills, because they don't have the additional monies throughout the year to come up with an amount and or that amount. The cost of living in Alaska is high, and it really does help alleviate some of the pressure that these people feel. Financially, it can be a real struggle. And so I just want to say that I am in total support of SJR 5.
Thank you, Linda. Mandy Gershon in Wasilla, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony, please.
Hi, this is Mandy Gershon in Wasilla, and I'm in full support of SJR 5. I think that this is basically a tax, and it's a burden for the poor. It's not fair. And we need that extra money, the poor do. If you need revenue, you should do it legally via some form of tax. And I forgot what else I was going to say because I've been waiting so long. But, we definitely need that money. And Dunleavy's got my full support. And that's another thing. Dunleavy was pretty much elected based on this. And I think that should open the eyes of the legislators to let them know this is what the majority of the people want. If they need revenue for government, then they need to do it properly and not just take it off the backs of the poor. I've been here since before the PFD, and when it first came out, we were told that you'll get the larger checks, 10, 20 years down the road, but the second they come out, the state wants to take them, and it's just wrong. So obviously, we need to put it in the Constitution because we can't trust our legislators to do what needs to be done. I have to live within my budget, and so does the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mandy. Margaret Selton from Homer. Marguerite, thank you for joining us. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
My name is Marguerite Selton, and I'm representing my husband, Oliver Selton, and I. And my husband was born in the state of, well, I guess it wasn't the state, in 1936, so he's lived here many years. And we just want to say that we strongly support SJR 5, that we believe that Governor Jay Hammond set this up for the people because he felt like it was best for our state and we all, for the people here. And we strongly agree with that. And I feel like the government really needs to learn to use money more efficiently and effectively and honestly. So we strongly support SJR 5. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Salton, for your testimony. Joe Elrod, Glenn Allen, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
My name is Joel Elrod. I live at mile 182.5 Glen Highway. I've lived in Alaska for over 35 years, and I support this bill. Unfortunately, it's very hard to find this bill online to be able to read it. I have not read it. Like the lady mentioned, everyone called in tonight has voted for Governor Dunleavy because of this promise to restore a full PFD. And some people said this welfare. The Constitution, if I'm wrong, tell me. The resources of the state of Alaska belong to the residents of Alaska. So that changes it from welfare to we own the state, and the most states do not say that, and that's why Alaska is such a wonderful state. I support a full PFD, I support this bill, and I support everything Mike Dunleavy is trying to do. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Joe, and just so those listening in for Joe, if you'd like to be able to read the bill, just do a search, Alaska State Legislature, and the homepage will come up. And there's a search bar, and if you type in SJR for Senate Joint Resolution, SJR 5, it should come up. Next, Wasilla Lynn Lowry, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
I am Lynn Lowry. I am full support of SJR 5. I'm a new resident to Alaska, and I have found that it is expensive to live here. And I am speaking on behalf of my husband, who works for the FAA, which is a government entity that never pays what they should to loyal expertise employees that are saving and protecting our skyways. And it would be a help to us if we could get our full PDF, our full PDF. It would help us out greatly. to live here and to continue working as we are. And I think the legislatures are thieves, and I'm going to vote them all out when it comes time to vote. I've watched the news until I'm sick of watching the news, and I'm really tired of the legislatures that we have, and I'm in full support of this bill and protecting the people's PFD. Thank you.
Thank you, Lynn. Senator Machicki has a question.
Hello there, Mrs. Lowry. Just curious how long you've been in Alaska.
I've been here three years.
Okay. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and I'm a voter.
Thank you. Next, we'll go to Laura Vandal. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please state your name for the record and indicate whether you support or oppose SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony, please.
I'm Laura Vandal, and I am in full support of SJR 5. As a seasonal employee, a senior, and with the high economics of living off and on in Alaska for over 33 years, we depend on that for our lives. My aunt is over 86 years old, and she only lives on disability up on Deer Mount in Ketchikan, Alaska. At this point, it's a life or death situation, and I'm in full support of SJR 5. Please bring that back. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Stephen Moore in Fairbanks, welcome. Please indicate your name and then your support or opposition at the beginning of your testimony, please.
My name is Stephen Moore, Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm full support, SJR 5. As I see it, it's a proposed amendment in the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to the Alaska Permanent Fund and the Permanent Fund Dividend. I'm an older dad. Not able to work. Doctor said no more work. So permanent fund is a big, big part of our yearly income. In addition to that, previous caller mentioned that money taken, with everybody's permanent fund taken, all of us are part of it. How does that money go back into the state equally? Does a bigger city get more money than the small area? Or do certain people get ignored just because there's no way to distribute it perfectly after you've taken it? That's what the permanent fund was designed for. The percentage in the Constitution says that the money will be distributed equally to all Alaskans, and that's why I'm in full support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore, this evening for joining us. Ken Brown, Soldotna, welcome. Indicate your name for the record and your opposition or support for SJ 5 at the beginning of your testimony, please.
This is Ken Brown, and I support SJR 5 and Governor Dunleavy's plan, and I think it's time for the politicians to listen. The people are getting a little wiser, their eyes are wide open, and if we have to finish the job that we started, we'll vote the rest of them out next election. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. In Anchorage, Susan Phillips, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
My name is Susan Phillips. I live in Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm in full support of SJR 5. I think it's way past time that our legislatures sit up there in their offices and do the job that they were put there to do and quit stealing from the people.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips.
I'm on board with other people. I feel that if they don't start listening to Dunleavy, then we need to vote them out and put people in that will. So, yes, I'm in full support of SJR 5.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you for letting me testify.
Thank you, Ms. Phillips. Linda Purvis in Fairbanks, welcome. Indicate your name and your support or opposition to the resolution, please, at the beginning of your testimony.
Hello, my name is Linda Purvis. I'm born and raised in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I am in full support of SJR 5. I am very dismayed that the legislatures are not moving ahead with Governor Dunleavy.
I voted for him, and I support him 100%. Thank you for taking my testimony.
Thank you for calling in, Linda. Mike Alexander in Big Lake, welcome. Indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
Mike Alexander and Big Lake, I'm in full support of this. And I think the people deserve a right to vote on this. And that's something you all should do for us. Put it out there. We can vote on it. By the time we get through an election season, we'll know every letter and sentence in that article. And it is only fair to the folks here because, as others have stated over time, again, it's our money. It's what was promised to us in there with the revenues from the oil and things and all that. So, and it helps a lot of people. You guys are missing a chance to put $2 billion a year in the economy, which will run through it about three or four times. So I hope you can find it to go right in there, get this thing through the Senate and the House, and get it out here where we can vote on it. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike. Next in Anchorage, Lisa Moore, welcome. Indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, my name is Lisa Moore from Anchorage, Alaska. Thank you for this opportunity to hear my voice, and I do fully support SJR 5. I believe that the PFD helps our economy by giving it to the people, not to legislators. I voted in and support our governor because of his plan to get our budget under control, which is a huge priority. Alaska's been in a recession for quite a while, and the other states are starting to prosper, and Alaska still is not. And our budget is very important to get that under. So I support the people knowing that they know how to spend their own money when they get it, and not the legislators. They've proven time and again that they are not responsible for spending money, and they need to get this budget under control. Otherwise, we don't prosper, and the rest of the 48 gets to prosper. Thank you for hearing my voice.
Thank you, Ms. Moore, for your testimony. William Tweed in Fairbanks, welcome. Indicate your name and your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
Hello there. William Tweed here in Fairbanks, and I am in total support of the SJR 5. I believe that we, the people, voted Mike Dunleavy in as governor, and the politicians should be following what we, the people, voted for, not what they want. And, yes, they do need to curb government spending some more. And, you know, it's always the people that are supposed to feel the pain, but never the government workers or, you know, these universities and everything and the budgets they have. So, I mean, there's things to look at to trim the budget. And so I support Mike Dunleavy, and I think that the politicians should too. The villages, the poor people, disabled, seniors, veterans could use the money. We don't all go on vacations with it. That's all I got to say.
Thank you, Mr. Tweed. Tanya Kitka and Kodiak, welcome. Indicate your name and your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Tanya Kitka. I'm in Kodiak, and I'm in support of SJR 5. I agree, of course, that the people should have a vote, and I think that I speak for a lot of people when I say that there's been a lot of testimony on the PFD and the various bills and the topics and the committees. But it starts to feel sort of futile. And I know this isn't the time to discuss a budget, but legislators keep echoing how we only have two kind of crummy options, you know, for the lowest, you know, people who earn lowest in our state, or in the rural areas. You know, our options that we're given are that are either our PFD will go or our services will go. And I don't think that that's good enough. You know, I think that, you know, you're probably tired of everybody telling you straight to your face that, oh, legislators, you know, aren't doing their job and stuff. But I do think that you're doing your job. I just think that you need to be more innovative and create real solutions that aren't going to be just those two options that are going to hurt those with the lowest income. I think that enshrining the PFD in the Constitution might feel like it's tying legislators' hands, but I think it kind of depoliticizes it, which is something that, you know, everyone can agree on. That's a win for everybody. You know, it keeps it out of a, you know, legislators trying to get in on going, oh, yeah, I'm supporting the PFD. I'll make sure that your PFD is the biggest that it's ever been sort of thing. You know, it takes that up.
Thank you, Ms. Kitka. And I encourage you to submit your testimony to the senate.judiciary@akleg.gov email. Jim Clark is calling in from Fairbanks. Welcome, Mr. Clark. Please indicate your name and your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
My name is Jim Clark. I am in full support of SJR 5, and I think it's a little ridiculous that we need to call in and support a bill that says that we deserve a right to decide what happens to the permanent fund instead of letting the legislatures in Juneau that live in a bubble do what they will. So I'm in full support of government levy. If the legislatures don't listen and don't participate in what the people have voted for, then it's going to be the people against Juneau, and you guys are all going to be kicked out on your butts. And that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hotchkiss. Tamara McCoy and Kasiloff, welcome. Indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to SJR 5, please, at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, my name is Tamara McCoy. I'm from Kasiloff, Alaska, and I fully support SJR 5. I believe that this was intended for the people, and it should stay with the people, and the power should be for the people to vote whether, you know, you guys get to use this money or not. And Machiki, I just want to tell you that people are counting on you to do the right thing, okay? That's my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McCoy. And Wade Hotchkiss, calling in from Anchorage, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, my name is Wade Hotchkiss. I support SJR 5. The people should always have a voice. I'm disappointed that our voices would be up for debate, especially when it comes to something that affects us all. I feel like it's ridiculous that this would be a debate, that this would not be on the ballot. And that's all I really have to say. I'm in full support of this bill.
Thank you for calling in, Wade. Jeffrey Knopf, calling from Anchorage, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. This is Jeffrey Knopf calling from Anchorage. I am in full support of SJR 5. It's important to realize this is the people's money, and it's always been the people's money. So I would appreciate it if you recognize and preserve the original formula and do not deviate from it. That would be very unwise. And thank you, and have a good evening.
Thank you, Mr. Knopf. Joanne Robitaille out of Ketchikan, welcome to Senate Judiciary. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to the resolution, please, at the beginning of your testimony.
My name is Joanne Robitaille from Ketchikan. I'm a 50-year resident. I am in support of SJR 5. I happen to have been sitting in the legislature, working for the legislature, when Jay Hammond made his speech about this, and the idea was that it went to every man, woman, and child, so the money was evenly distributed through the state and not to one company or business or you know, whatever. But, I'm in total support of it, and the Constitution says it should not be touched by the government, and it should be left the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne, for your testimony this evening. Greg Collins of Homer, welcome. Indicate your name and whether you support or oppose SJR 5 in your testimony, please.
I support SJR 5. I saw the meeting with Clem Gillian and Senator Chitty. I support them.
Greg, the connection is very poor, so I'm going to ask you, could you please state your name again and then either tell us yes, you support, or no, you do not support, so we can hear you clearly.
Yeah, Greg Collins, Homer, Alaska. I fully support SJR.
And that's a yes, you fully support, is that correct?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Collins. Were you finished with your testimony? I'll take that as a yes. Thank you. And if you had more, please do email senate.judiciary@kleg.gov. Ronald Bernier from Wasilla, welcome. Please indicate your name and your support or opposition to SJR 5, please, at the beginning of your testimony.
Good evening. My name is Ron Bernier. I'm a business owner. We have 9 children at home that we homeschool, and I plan on sending all 9 to college, and without the PFD, that'll be very difficult. It was designed for the future of Alaska for our children. And my family and I fully support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ronald, for calling in this evening. In Big Lake, Susie Fletcher, welcome. Please indicate your name and your support or opposition to SJR5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, my name is Susie Fletcher. I'm in full support of SJR5. In democracy, we should be able to vote on such an important issue. We vote for Dunleavy to save the PFD for our kids and grandkids. Thank you.
Thank you, Susie, for calling in this evening. Out of Chugiak, welcome, Karen Perry. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to SJR5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Yes, thank you. My name is Karen Perry from Chugiak, Alaska, and yes, I fully support SJR5. These are our mineral rights that are being wrongfully taken from us. They are our money. I just really don't know how difficult of a concept that is for legislators to wrap their brains around. It is not the government's money. The government cannot stimulate the private sector or local economies by growing government. Driving small businesses and families out of the state of Alaska, it should not be your goal, which is going to be what happens. Stealing our money is taxation without representation, because you are stealing not only from voting adults, they're stealing from children and the grandchildren of the state. They never had a chance to say, yeah, take my money or don't take my money. So it's wrong to steal from many to support a few special interests. And I also disagree with a caller from Fairbanks that said our representative government is working. It is not working. How can you say it's working when they blasted through $29 billion of savings? So I am in full support. Thank you for my testimony. Have a good night.
Thank you, Ms. Perry. Janet Johnson of Palmer, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Janet Johnson. I'm from Palmer, and I definitely support SJR5. And that's pretty much what I want to say, because I voted for Governor Dunleavy. I believe in everything that he stood for, and I expect my legislators to do as they were elected to do. Anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson, for joining us this evening. In Soldotna, Steve Virgin, please state your name for the record and indicate your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony, please.
Yes, I'm Steve Virgin in Soldotna with my wife, Sarah. I am full support of the resolution. I think there's two things the state needs to take into serious consideration, and that is that in 1980, we had a budget of $1.5 billion, and obviously we know that that's changed significantly. We saw a surge up to the top of $13 billion. But having lived here for over 50 years, and my wife born and raised from a village in Alaska, we've not seen accountability on the legislature side. Just having that fund available to them is an incentive not to budget, and it's an incentive not to get serious about the future of our generations to come. Here in Soldotna, in the winter, we see utilities in our house at about 800 in the winter for just 1 month. That's a tough one to sweat on, because we're in fixed income, as most people are at our age, and watching all of the costs around us go up, we benefit from the PFD.
I appreciate your time and appreciate you guys being there.
Thank you, Steve, for calling in. Chugiak Thomas Williams, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony, please.
Yes, thank you. My name is Thomas Williams. I live out in Chugiak. I'm representing myself, my wife, and my five children. I'm in full support of this resolution, full support of Dunleavy and his agenda. Whether it's $3 or $3,000, that's never been the issue in the past until it was recently politicized when the previous governor and legislature decided to get their hands on the PFD. It should never be something that you guys had any control over. It was set up and paid out, and just because the dollar amount has gone up does not give anyone the right to start taking money and saying who deserves what. This needs to go before the people, and that's it. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Williams, for calling in this evening. In Eagle River, Dean Camry, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to the resolution at the beginning of your testimony.
My name is Dean Camry, Eagle River, Alaska. I'm in favor of the resolution. I am one of the 146,000 people who voted for Dunleavy. I voted for him to control the budget and restore the PFD. It is the people's money. They know how to spend it better than 60 legislators. And we need to do everything in our power to keep their hands off of the PFD. They've already got us $1.6 billion in the hole. They need to be forced to live within their means. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Camry, for joining us in Glen Allen. Welcome, Kathy Peters, to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony.
Hi, my name is Kathy Peters. I'm from Glen Allen, Alaska. I totally support SJR 5. I feel like it shouldn't be left up to the whims of a governor or a legislation. It should be put, if any changes are made, they should be voted on by the people. So thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. Appreciate your input, Ms. Peters. And Emily Becker, calling in from Anchorage, welcome. Please indicate your name for the record and your support or opposition to SJR 5 at the beginning of your testimony, please.
Hi, my name is Emily Becker, and I'm calling from Anchorage, and I am strongly opposed to SJR 5. I've listened to a lot of testimony by now. Governor Dunleavy was elected 51%, not a mandate to change the Constitution. You all have also been elected. You are not just roadkill. We really depend on the legislature to do a lot of things, a lot of really boring stuff that you guys do, which I'm very thankful for, critical stuff that we depend on you to do. It's a ridiculous idea to give up your power. You know, the three branches of government are there for a reason. We have checks and balances, and it's your job. You control the purse strings. Funding the government, including the PFD, those are all the decisions that we elected you to make. And citizens will always say no to taxes, but yes to all the things that we want and that we need. I really believe the legislature should be free to respond to different events. You never know what's going to happen. I don't think we should be constrained by changing the Constitution. That's a pretty severe response to what's going on. I think the PFD has become a dangerous entitlement. It's like a handout that people now think that they need more than schools or anything else. And I really hope that you oppose these amendments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Becker, for your testimony this evening. I am not seeing anyone else online. We did have some callers that dropped off. We apologize for that. And for those that hung tight with us, thank you very much for your patience. I'm going to check to see if there's anyone in the room who would like to testify. Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony. Are there any questions or comments from members? Seeing none, I just want to again thank the public for taking the time out of your evening. I want to thank my fellow members for joining me this evening. As I've said, I'm not sure how many times, you are welcome to submit your written testimony to senate.judiciary@akleg.gov. And with our business being complete for the day, we are now adjourned, and let the record reflect the time is 7:32.